This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, here we are. Happy Thanksgiving. And I am not going to be here tomorrow. We have an extra long day today. But I'm not going to be here tomorrow, so I thought it might be fun to treat this like a Friday show. And one of the things that we do on Fridays is give you an opportunity to ask questions of me. So whatever you have questions about, now's the time to ask them. You could start queuing up 800-848-9222 because it is time for...
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Whatever you have questions about, as long as they are interesting, we want to hear them. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 open lines, and you can go ahead and start queuing up. If you have questions about pro wrestling, Thanksgiving, the mob, anything political, anything in my personal life, anything about casino gambling, anything related to my dietary habits, personal preferences, if you need advice about something, you want to talk about space, aliens, time travel, you name it. And we are going to give a prize for whomever comes up with the best and most interesting question. Now, we have no Alex today. We have no Kenneth. And we have no Matt Blaze. So I'm mentioning that for two reasons. One, that means I actually have more confidence in who is going to be selected as the winner of the Ask Frank Anything best question today. So the people that determine who is today's best question will be Broadway Bill Lee, the engineer, not the famous DJ on CBS FM, although they're frequently confused for one another. Avery, who's one of our more controversial telephone talent coordinators for obvious reasons, and Joe, who is seems like a very interesting guy in his own right. So they are going to be the determining factor in terms of who comes up with the best question. The other thing I want to mention is because we are, you know, staffed essentially with a crew that doesn't usually work this show, if you hear something a little out of the box, if you hear an occasional flub or something like that, chill out, okay? It's a holiday. There's no need to get crazy. We're all doing the best we can, including everybody here. So just take it in stride and remember, chill out. 800-848-9222. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 open lines if you want to call in with a question. By the way, the operative part of this segment is the only way it works is if you ask questions. As I've described before, questions generally begin with words like what, where, how, does, do, are. So you shouldn't call in and give a whole lengthy commentary and then raise your voice on the end for me to comment. No, we want a question, and ideally you want to get right to the point with whatever your question is. Let me begin with Alan in New Jersey. Hello, Alan.
Good morning, Frank. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. What do you have planned today?
Going to my sister's and having a turkey there. My question is, everybody knows what it means. You're avoiding the authorities or you're running from the police. But where does the term on the lam come from?
You know, it's a great question. It goes back to the 1800s, but I don't know where it comes from. And I don't know that anybody knows where it comes from. I have actually looked up that very phrase before, because I've been curious about it, and I'm a pretty good internet researcher, and I have found nothing in terms of a definitive answer in terms of where it comes from. I have no idea, Alan. It's a great question. If anybody knows, by the way, they can email me or they can call in themselves. I have different theories, but I don't know.
Well, thank you, Frank. You were my only hope.
Yeah, sorry, Alan. If I find out, I will let you know. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Igor is in Fairfield. Hello, Igor.
Greetings, Frank. Happy birthday to your boy tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It is a special day. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So, listen, you've interviewed a lot of different people, celebrities, as well as authors and the such. And many times when you interview them, you talk about having seen their movie or their television show, or that you read their book. Was there ever a time where you kind of lied and said you actually read the book or something like that because you didn't have time and you sort of made up some questions just by looking at the liner notes or something like that?
Well,
is there any time you did that?
Let me think here, because I'm sure there is, right? And by the way, I've interviewed many people without reading their book or seeing their film or whatever it is I'm talking about. But I usually, in the course of that interview, would not make a point of saying that I read the book. So I usually would try not to tell an author or a filmmaker or a documentarian that I'd seen their work or experienced their work if I hadn't, because then they will assume that I have a level of knowledge that I don't have. And I'm trying to think if I've done that. You know what I've definitely done once or twice is I have not read a book in its entirety, and I have told a guest on the air that I've read it. One example stands out. I was interviewing Mike Walker, who was years ago the publisher of The Inquirer, and he wrote a book. It was a fiction book, but it was an interesting book. And at the time that we had done the interview, I had barely started the book, and I mentioned that I read it. And I felt guilty almost immediately, and this is going back 10 years, right? I felt guilty almost immediately for kind of fibbing about that. And the same thing happened that I'm describing. He assumed I had a level of knowledge about one of the characters that I didn't have, and I was kind of embarrassed when he called me on it. And he wasn't trying to embarrass me. He was just trying to go along with what he thought that I was telling the truth. So that's what it's very rare that I would lie to a guest, but that's one example, this interview that I did with Mike Walker about 10 years ago, where I definitely exaggerated the truth a little bit.
See, I bet your conscience feels better now, Frank, doesn't it? Have a happy Thanksgiving, Frank.
Thank you, Igor. Appreciate it. 800-848-9222. Whatever you have questions about. And again, I love that it's a Thanksgiving show. I love doing shows on holidays. Well, I mean, obviously, I love being with my family on holidays. But I love that people maybe are a little less adversarial. They're a little less ready to jump down your throat. They're a little less ready to go to war with one another if you happen to disagree. So I like doing shows on holidays for that reason, because I feel like people are in a little bit of a better mood. Let me say hello to Pete in Piscataway. Hello, Pete.
Good morning, Frank. Frank, the Mets have had very good right-handed pitching over the years. But what are your favorite three left-handed pitchers of all time for the New York Mets?
Oh, that is a great question, because so many of the great Met pitchers over the years have been right-handed. People like Tom Seaver, people like people like Doc Gooden. The list goes on and on. If I had to, obviously, I think number one has to be Jerry Kuzman, right? That's number one. Then, because it was more of the era that I was following the New York Mets, I think I would pick Al Leiter, even though, you know, I recognize that there have probably been a lot better Met left-handed pitchers than Al Leiter, but I would pick Al Leiter. And then the third, because of how you frame the question, not the best, but my favorite, it's a toss-up between either Sid Fernandez and Bobby Ojeda. And I love them both. And I'm going to go with Bobby Ojeda because I knew him a little bit. I know him a little bit. And they were both great pitchers. But I'll give Sid Fernandez an honorable mention.
I'll give John Matlack an honorable mention, too.
Hey, you can't go wrong with John Matlack either. That's also a good one. A great question. Thank you, Pete. 800-848-9222. If you have a question about absolutely anything, let me say hello to Chris in the Catskills. Hello, Chris.
Frank, good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise, Chris. What do you got planned for today?
My next-door neighbor, who's 82 years old and blind, her children live far away. I'm going to have Thanksgiving with her. And the guy that ended my political career, and now we're close friends. He invited me to come over and have Thanksgiving dinner with his family.
Oh, that's nice. I love hearing that. That's great.
So if the primary cycle in the Republican Party for president were to start 1 month from today, and it's Donald Trump and DeSantis and, say, five other candidates, who would win and how would it unfold?
Well, I am notoriously bad with predictions. I think your track record on predictions is actually a little bit better. But if it's, let's say it's Trump, DeSantis, Glenn Youngkin, Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence, Chris Christie, Larry Hogan, and Nikki Haley, I think there's very little doubt in my mind that Donald Trump wins for the same sort of reason that he won in 2016 in the primaries, which is I think Trump would have a do or die base of support. He'd have about 40 to 45% of the electorate that are sticking with him no matter what. And I think the anti-Trump vote would be splintered unless they all unite behind one candidate. Now, it is possible because you remember, you know better than me, being a Democrat, what happened in 2020. Bernie Sanders was very much on a pace to win the Democratic nomination. And then Obama and the other members of the Democratic establishment, they persuaded all of the other candidates that were not named Biden to drop out of the race. And all of them did, except for Elizabeth Warren, and coalesce behind Biden. And so they didn't have that same problem that that Trump had. I'll point out to the Republicans that might be worried about this, if they had ranked choice voting, they wouldn't need to worry about that. But yeah, I think if there's a wide field of candidates, Trump's base of support is strong. And I think the other candidates, all of them have different positives and negatives. Although I'll be honest, I don't know where Chris Christie's base really comes from. But I think they would all divide the anti-Trump vote, and Trump would sail in with a plurality as he did in 2016.
I agree with you. Legislator Joe Maloney, the guy that invited me to Thanksgiving tomorrow, he disagrees with us. He thinks DeSantis is going to win, and he polls people at his liquor store, and he said 9 out of 10 said they'd vote for DeSantis.
Well, look,
I pointed out to him,
it's possible, Chris.
It's not that popular in New York.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, and in politics, a week is a lifetime. So we could be sitting here a year from now, and Trump will be in the middle of a criminal trial, and that could be a distraction, and maybe he's not campaigning with the same kind of vigor that we saw in 2016. So it's certainly possible. I have no idea, but that's my best guess. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Al in Tenafly. Hello, Al.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
I'm great.
You are the expert on everything broadcast-wise. I grew up listening to, or maybe you did too, a radio TV host named Joe Franklin.
Sure.
I was wondering, because I was a big-time publicity guy at one point. I represented Bob Hope. And as a birthday gift, I had Bob Hope go on the Joe Franklin show. And I'm just wondering, Frank, you know the answer. Was Joe Franklin the longest running TV or radio host in the New York market?
Well, I believe the answer on television is certainly yes. Certainly he claimed to be on both television and radio. But I don't know of anybody that has had more longevity in the New York market than Joe. Now, Joe started on television on 1951 on Channel 7. And
right.
then he moved over to Channel 9. Initially, it was WWOR. Then they would call themselves WOR. And he was on television every day, initially first in the afternoon and then at night, every day from 1951 to 1993. So that's 42 years straight of being on the air 5 days a week. I don't know of anyone that has come close to that on a local level. Radio is a little bit more tricky because you're including non-commercial entities like WBAI and other entities. So I'm not as confident in the answer on radio, but I think certainly in terms of local television in New York, I don't know of anybody that's been on for 42 years. That's for sure. Thank you, Al. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to, Larry on Long Island. Hello, Larry.
Frank, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, just a simple question. Have you ever considered or have you paid for a lap dance in a gentleman's club?
I have, yes. I'm not really much of a strip club or gentleman's club guy. I don't like I don't like them. It's just not my thing. But, yes, I have been to a few over the years, and, yes, I have paid for a lap dance. Absolutely.
I appreciate your honesty.
Sure thing, Larry. Thank you. But, again, I never really found it to be that big of a deal. Honestly, it's not my thing at all. 800-848-9222. And, by the way, the dancers that I had gotten lap dances from, I think there was more than one over the years, right? They were female, just for the record. 800-848-9222. John is in Eastchester. Hello, John.
Hey, Frank. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. What do you have planned for today?
Going to my aunts and uncles, and it's just my family. There's just nine of us, Frank.
That's great. That's great.
My question to you is, and this is a very strange one, but you said ask anything.
Anything. I'm ready. Bring it on.
Do you believe that there is life on other planets other than Earth?
100%. Absolutely.
Now,
go ahead.
Agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And John, and thank you. And to me, look, the universe is so vast. You see all these images that are coming back from this James Webb Space Telescope. And the one thing, if you ever read the book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or see the BBC series, you will see one of the things they say in that, and it's so true, is that space is big. You can't even really comprehend how big it is. It's just enormous. And to assume that we are the only place that, you know, God has put life in the entire universe, I think is just arrogance. You know, I mean, I don't know how people do believe that, honestly. To me, the better question is, have entities, have life forms from other planets visited Earth? That's a question I'm less certain about. But in terms, I think you got to play the odds. In my view, definitely life on other planets. 100%. All right, one open line if you want to jump on board with a question. 800-848-9222. Jennifer, Corey, Tony, Neil, Pam, we will get to you after we return. And thank you for listening to this very special Thanksgiving edition of The Other Side of Midnight. We'll continue straight ahead.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. This is a terrific anthem, this song from Andy B. And I did listen to his Thanksgiving song yesterday. It's very good. It needs some work. It's not ready for airplay yet, but we need to figure it out. It's Thanksgiving, and I know a lot of you are going to be watching the parade today. I know a lot of you are going to be watching football. I appreciate you starting your day with me. And again, I know a few of you have written to me about some of the technical problems that you're hearing on the air. The only thing I would ask, we're working on ironing all these out. We appreciate your patience, and we're getting to them. We're aware of them. We're getting to them. We're working on fixing everything. So everybody's doing the best that they can. We are doing an Ask Frank Anything. We are giving you an opportunity to ask questions about anything you would like to know, as long as it's in the form of a question. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Lenny in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Lenny.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
You too, Lenny. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, have you ever stolen anything? And what's the last thing you've stolen? And Will that guy ever collect his $1,100?
Yes, yes. I don't know why people keep asking me about that second part. Have I ever stolen anything? I remember there was an incident in high school where my friends and I were at a pizza parlor, and they never asked us to pay. And again, we were 14 years old at the time. They had never asked us to pay, and we walked out of the pizza parlor. We said goodbye.
Well, that's more of a dine and dash.
Yeah, so that's the
stealing something from a store. Like,
no, I've never done that.
No,
I don't think so. No, I never did that. I think that's the closest I've ever come is stealing from a pizza parlor, which I do regret. I hope my son doesn't do that as a 14-year-old. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Neil on Staten Island. Neil, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Frank, and certainly a happy birthday to the little man.
Thank you.
For his first one, I'm sure you're very excited, Frank.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Frank, I've been talking to my friends, and I've told them that you're really the P.T. Barnum of advertising. You could sell ice to an Eskimo, Frank. And over the years, I've known the products that you've been selling. You went to a Route 22 Toyota at one time, to Life Change Tea, to a whole host of products in between. Do they give you samples of the product? I'm sure Toyota's not giving you a Toyota. So we'll leave that one out. But the other stuff, do they give you samples? And what's your favorite product to advertise over the years?
Oh, that's a great question. There have been many. Obviously, I really enjoy the MyPillow products. I really like the products that they've offered, not only the pillow itself, but the Giza bed sheets, which are really life-changing, and the mattress topper. So those stand out. I did notice a pretty significant boost in energy with taking Balance of Nature, and even though they're not currently advertising, I still take Balance of Nature. If I had to pick a favorite, and maybe it's because it's more recent for me, you know, I got this air purifier with this Eden Pure Thunderstorm. This thing is phenomenal. It's so tiny. It's so quiet. It's great. But, in terms of products that I've gotten to sample, like obviously, you know, I enjoy having Plaza College, as an advertiser, but I've never really sampled their instructions in terms of how to become a courtroom stenographer or a typist. So I can't speak to that. But in terms of things that I've sampled, that Eden Pure Thunderstorm is right up there. And some of the weight loss products that I've tried over the years, those have really had a pretty significant impact on my life. And I consider myself pretty lucky to have done them for free. But wait, I'm changing my answer. I have had laser eye surgery. And without laser eye surgery, I would be wearing corrective lenses, glasses or contact lenses every day. And now I don't have to because I had laser eye surgery. And that's been my favorite to endorse. I'll say that. 800-848-9222. Two open lines if you want to jump on board. Let me say hello to Jennifer in Boston. Jennifer, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, Frank. Same to you and your family. And, a blessed happy birthday to Carmen. He's such a beautiful boy.
Thank you so much.
Handsome. I said he really is. God, you can see he's filled with life and light.
Thank you.
He's
you made my day. Thank you.
So all good things.
What are you doing today, Jennifer?
Just hanging out with a couple of family members.
Great.
We're boring vegans and vegetarians.
A vegetarian?
I'm a vegan. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That surprises me a little bit, but that's great. That's good. Good for you. My wife is not. She's a pescatarian. We can relate to what it's like to have all sorts of different dietary needs. But I appreciate
exactly,
that.
Yeah, been a vegetarian for 30 years and a vegan for.
Back then that was tough. 30 years ago, it's not as if you had a vegetarian restaurant on every corner.
Exactly. Very difficult. Then, you know, especially if you want to go out somewhere.
Do you eat dairy? Oh, no, you're vegan. You don't eat dairy even. Wow, that's very challenging.
Nope, and I don't eat palm oil, which seems to be in everything, because it's awful what they do to orangutans and elephants.
Wow.
Palm harvest. So, yeah, I'm a huge animal lover, Frank.
That's
I've
great.
Always
that's great.
Animal people. But, that said, I was just wondering... if you have ever had a stalker, and I don't mean necessarily like a violent stalker, God willing, you didn't have one of those, but, you know, someone that either wanted to go out with you that you never went out with, or someone that, you know what I mean, just you went out with and it didn't work and they didn't want to let go. And also perhaps what's the wildest thing, either good or bad, that ever happened on a date?
Well, I'd like to give the second one some thought. You know, in terms of the first one, so when you say a stalker, you mean like somebody that I met, you know, and then potentially pursued as a romantic interest and they were, you know, obsessed, fatal attraction style, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, not necessarily violently, but right. Yeah, like I knew a guy once, he would leave me notes about he saw me go out and the outfit I was wearing and I would have more fun if I went out with him than the guy went out
really?
With me.
Really? I can honestly say I don't think I've ever had a stalker. I've had a lot of folks that I've known as listeners over the years who are a little, you know, who are a little overly, I'll call overly intrusive. But no, I wouldn't say I've ever had a stalker or something along those lines. The wildest thing that ever happened on a date. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, it sounds kind of tame, but it led to a whole series of adventures. I took a young lady out, when I was about 20 or 21. I took a young lady out, I lost my car keys, and it was quite, we went to Coney Island, and, she lived in Manhattan, I lived in Staten Island, and it became quite an adventure getting her back home and not kind of ruining the whole, charm and the tenor of the date with, worrying about how I'm gonna get home, how she's gonna get home. So I know it sounds kind of lame, but losing the car keys, it led to a whole series of adventures. I may have a better answer, Jennifer. I just don't know what it is at the moment. Have a happy Thanksgiving. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. And, Bill, you just cut off. I don't know if you did something there, but you cut off my headphones for a bit. I think we're back now. But 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Corey in Rockland County. Hello, Corey.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
I'm well, thanks.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. You too.
So my question is for you is what would you suggest, or if you maybe even know or have advice, for someone who was looking to maybe try and get into politics, like a political career? Would they start locally, especially someone who didn't have – let's say a whole lot of money, like obviously, you know, I know getting into politics does cost money and fundraising, but you got to kind of get in with someone somehow, some way, because you got to get that
sure.
exposure.
First of all, the biggest factor in terms of what guidance I would give them is where they live. Are we talking about you, Corey, or someone like you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rockland is actually a great place to start a political career for a few reasons. One, it's because it's one of the few counties where there's a vibrant two-party system. And that means the Republicans need you, the Democrats need you, and the minor parties are enormously powerful. I think, hang on one second, if you would, Corey, I'm going to finish our answer. We actually are getting a call from our boss, John Katsimatidis, right now. John, happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving. What's going on?
Need
anything?
No, we're good. I'm looking forward to seeing you at 6. I don't know. I know you're filling in from 6 to 10 this morning. I'm surprised you're up late listening now.
Well, yes. Your stream is a little bit off.
All right. We're gonna work on that. Bill, we got the boss on right now. And can you facilitate with a touch base with Dan? Okay. Okay, great. And Avery, if you could take, John, I'm going to hand you to Avery or one of the guys here, so that they can explain what's happening. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in a few hours. And, again, thanks for the opportunity to work here. As I've said many times, this is one of the things I'm most thankful for. So thanks. Here's Avery. Hang on. There you go. Corey, let me finish my point, the answer to you, if I can. So Rockland is a great place, not only because you have a vibrant two-party system, but And you can get involved with the parties. But that means if you get along with the party leadership, either Republican, Democrat, conservative, working families or whatever, there's an opportunity to do something with them. If you don't, there's an opportunity to get involved with one of the insurgent groups. But the other place why Rockland is such a good community to get involved with is because of local government. They have town councils, they have town government, and they have all these layers of local government that you could get involved with that, even some, depending on where you live in Rockland, I think there's even villages, and there's a lot of opportunity.
Would you say that's
where
you would start?
Well, it depends, right? It depends on what you're looking to do. And if you're serious about this, Corey, email me and I'll give you kind of what I would do if I was in your position, okay?
Sure. Just if you could throw your email out
there.
Sure.
Yeah, it's frank.morano at WABCradio.com, frank.morano at WABCradio.com. All right. So, that's that. And, a lot depends on where you live, though. It's a good question, but so much depends on where you live, because Pat Buchanan, for instance, he told me that the reason he became he started working at the White House was because he wanted to be involved in politics, and he lived in Washington, D.C. And being someone that was right of center, some would say far to the right of the center, there was no opportunity to get involved in terms of running for local office or volunteering on local campaigns in Washington, D.C. So what do? You go to work for the president. And he knew that his best opportunity to get involved in politics, being a D.C. resident, was to become an aide to Richard Nixon, which is what he did. All right, 800-848-9222, 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Tony in Clifton. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Frank. Happy holidays. I'm so excited. It's an awesome time of year.
Thank you. It sure is. Happy Thanksgiving.
And I wish you and your family all the best.
Likewise. Appreciate it.
So, I liked your other caller. I love politics. Some of us love it. Some of us don't. But I think it's a very exciting field. And so my question for you is, for those of us who have that part of us that do love politics, one of the things that we're looking at, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is just looking at ways that the political arena differs from corporate arena, and it differs drastically in many ways. In the corporate arena, so my question to you is, the biggest crisis we have now on a HR level in our political system, and many look at our president because we have concerns. Can he do the job? What will happen if he makes a boo-boo because he's not feeling good? So tell me, looking at history, looking at the Constitution, and just comparing things to be more appropriate to corporate America, how would you maybe adjust the Constitution or add some different things? How would you make these decisions in the event, even not looking at our president, just to be neutral, how would you ensure that we one day don't come into that situation where someone is in charge of pressing the button and he's not up to it that day?
I'm not sure that I follow. So what would I do differently to change what exactly? I'm not sure that I follow the question.
Constitutionally, we're looking at the Constitution guides how our president is handled or what our government does if he has a health emergency.
Right. Well, look, I think, and thank you, Tony, I think the provisions that are laid out in the 25th Amendment are sound, right? And if someone is incapacitated, there's a means for the cabinet to declare that incapacitation. And, I think that's sound, right? So I think the provisions in the 25th Amendment make a lot of sense. And the whole reason that the 25th Amendment is there is because of what happened with Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson, after suffering a stroke, was clearly not up to the job of being president. And he still had to run the country. He had a constitutional office to handle. And it looks like his wife, Edith, was probably the person that was running the country at that time. Had they had a 25th Amendment in place, then that would not have been the case. So I think that's where that comes from. 800-848-9222. We're going to continue with Ask Frank Anything in just a moment. We're going to continue with your we'll hold off on taking a break. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 open lines if you want to comment. Mike is in Parts Unknown. Hello, Mike.
Parts Unknown is Myrtle Beach, Frank.
Love it.
You've got a real fixation for Lake George, man. I'll tell you that. Wow. Listen, Frank, I was an extra in a couple movies, quite a few. If you had a chance to be an extra in any movie that's one of your favorites, which movie would it be and why?
Oh, that's a good one. Look, I think it probably has to be The Godfather. I'm a big fan of The Godfather. And there, you know, just to be able to observe up close so many stars before they were stars would have been a real treat. And to be able to have a ringside seat for a film that became such an incredible piece of filmmaking, I think that would be fun. Additionally, all the stories that I've heard from Johnny Russo firsthand and in books and in interviews right. from people like Coppola and Brando. It seems like this was a really fun group and a real fun bunch of people to hang around with. They were always playing practical jokes on one another and getting along with one another pretty well. So it seems like a pretty fun film set, and even while it was a very, very productive one. So it would probably be The Godfather. What would your choice be, Mike? I'm just curious.
Well, I did Mickey Blue Eyes with James Caan, Born on the 4th of July, Bronx Tale. My first one was Pope of Greenwich Village. There were so many great ones. I would probably enjoy being in so many different films, and I met so many good people. It would have to be, you know, the iconic Godfather 2, you know. Leave the cannolis and take the gun, you know.
Right. Leave the gun, take the cannolis. Although, right, yeah, especially on Thanksgiving, you can't go show up somewhere without cannoli. Hey, Mike, thank you. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Real quick.
Yep.
You know about my dad. Everyone called him Carmine, 52 years supermarkets. I'd like to have a chance one day, maybe today, to speak to John Cacciamatidis. But keep doing what you're doing. And give a hug to Carmine for me. It's going to be a special day tomorrow. And I did play his number today, but you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Roger in Massachusetts. Hello, Roger.
Yeah, hi, thanks. First of all, I wish you and your family a happy and healthy Thanksgiving day tomorrow.
Thank you. Likewise, Roger. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your calls and your contributions to the show since we've been doing it. So thank you.
Yes, well, thank you. But anyway, what in the world is the Ad Council, and what is their purpose?
You know, the Ad Council, are those the folks that run PSAs on radio stations?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And or on billboards.
Yeah.
Too.
It's been around for about 80 years. It's a nonprofit organization that produces, distributes, and promotes public service announcements on behalf of essentially other nonprofit organizations, other nonprofit groups, or other agencies of the government or other NGOs. It's basically a clearinghouse for running public service announcements.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's okay. not a very exciting answer, Roger, but the best I can do.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Roger. Appreciate it. 800-848-9222. Ray is in New Jersey. Hello, Ray.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. Okay, if somebody put a gun to your head and told you you had to do either cocaine, methamphetamine, or LSD, or they're going to kill you, which one would you do?
Well, look, at the moment, you know, because it's always very stressful from when there are technical problems at a radio station. At the moment, if someone offered me a Valium or a Xanax, that's what I would be taking. But if you're talking in the normal course of my day, you know, I've never taken any of those. So it was meth,
right.
Cocaine, or LSD, you said, right?
Yeah.
I can understand. I've never taken it, but I can understand people that have taken cocaine who have worked odd hours. For instance, you know, Freud was a big cocaine user. A lot of doctors get into using cocaine. So I, and that's one of the reasons I never wanted to take it, because I could so see how it would be such an aid in keeping me awake. But if you're giving me a choice of the, just those three, I am very curious about the supposed mind-altering effects of LSD, and maybe it's reading too many commentaries from Timothy Leary or things like that, and or seeing the episodes of Mad Men where they're all on LSD. If you're giving me a choice of those three, I'm going to take LSD. I get nosebleeds anyway, so I'm not eager to do cocaine. Every picture I've seen of a meth addict, they have no teeth, and I don't want to lose my teeth. So, given a choice of those three, I would take LSD, I think. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 open lines if you want to call in with a question for Ask Frank Anything. Let me say hello to Al in Yonkers. Hello, Al.
Good morning to you, Frank, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family today.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. Frank, you know, my question to you is, you'd agree when President Nixon, at the end, when Watergate was closing in on him, you would agree that Chief of Staff Alexander Haig, who went on to become Secretary of State under Reagan, that for a time he was running the day-to-day operations in the country?
Well, I don't – obviously, I wasn't there firsthand, but I have heard that reported, yes.
Yes. Okay, great. All the best.
That was the whole question?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, because we were talking about with the in regards to the amendment, if the president is incapacitated, and I just thought I would run that question by you.
Yeah, again, and that's what I've heard, right? I don't know that for a fact, Al, but you know, whoever the chief of staff is, does become sort of like the gatekeeper, the guy that makes day to day decisions about certain things. And Al Haig was the chief of staff at the time. Towards the end there, the Nixon administration was in some chaos, and he was an active duty 4-star Army general. And look, he did the same thing that he tried to subsequently do when Reagan was shot. He tried to take some control, right? So I think that's, you know, that is probably what occurred. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Sarah in Wisconsin. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Frank, and happy Thanksgiving, and happy birthday to Carmine. It's been so fun listening to your stories about
him. Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoy them. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. I just want to mention, you know, the first fellow that called you about the expression on the lam, there is a wonderful program on NPR on the weekends called Away with Words every weekend, and that is exactly what they are devoted to doing.
Oh, people interesting. Yeah, so he should call, that fellow should call that guy.
Well, yeah, call that program, and I can't tell you if it's Saturday or Sunday, but he could go and find out. It's called Away with Words. It's been on NPR forever, and it's just a delightful show. Anyway, my question to you is, we all know that you're number one at night, although Curtis keeps telling us he's creeping up on you. Which we know is not the case. And we all know that Sid is number one in the morning. If there was a weak link in the WABC schedule that needs improving, what day part would it be in?
Well, look, there's different – you got to understand, though, there's different numbers of people listening at different day parts. Like, so I might be number one at night, and there might be a show on during the middle of the day that has more listeners, but that's number 10 because there are fewer people awake at night than during the day. So if that makes sense, you follow what I'm saying, Sarah? So even though we may be number one and they may be number 10, that doesn't mean that that show doesn't have more listeners. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's relative to listenership.
Right.
I do
right.
understand.
Right.
Understand that.
I think the tapering off begins after the morning show. And I don't think it's a reflection of anything that we have on our station. I think there's just some very stiff competition on some of the other talk stations in the New York area. So I you know, I could say, all right, from 10 to 12, we're not doing as well as some other radio stations. In fact, I think that's the only day part that we're not killing it in. But I don't think it's because of anything we're doing. I think it's because there's another very good show on at another station at that time. Have a happy Thanksgiving, Sarah. We're going to continue with your questions in just a minute. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They want to hear the Thanksgiving song. All right. This is a Thanksgiving song. I hope you enjoy it. Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. I love you. Love to eat turkey, 'cause it's good. The great Adam Sandler singing the Thanksgiving song 30 years ago. This song came out. Can you believe that? I know a lot of you are excited to see the parade today. I know a lot of you are excited to see some football today. Obviously, I think the Giants are playing the Cowboys. That should be a good game. And the Detroit Lions, who always plays on Thanksgiving, keep that in mind for the $1,000 minute a little bit later. The Detroit Lions are going to be in action, as they always are. So that's interesting. We are answering your questions on any subject. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 open lines. My thanks, by the way, to our chief engineer, Dan Herschel, who hightailed it here in the middle of the night to make sure we were back on the straight and narrow. And I think any technical problems that we were experiencing are now gone because Dan has come to the rescue. All right. We are in the midst of giving you an opportunity to ask questions with
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
So we are going to answer as many of your questions in the next 5 minutes as we can. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Charles in Queens. Hello, Charles.
Hi, good morning. Great morning. Show as usual.
Thank you.
You said, Frank, several months ago that you disagreed with President Trump assassinating Soleimani. I opened my eyes. What? You disagree with that? I don't understand. He's the head. He was the head of the IRGC.
So what's your question, Charles? What's your question?
He's a terrorist organization. He's the head. He was that Khomeini.
So what's your question, Charles?
He was like killing 500
what's
terrorists.
Your, thank you. Okay. What we're going to do, guys, is if you have a question, ask a question. There's three out of 4 hours on not only this show, but 4 hours every other day where you can make comments, right? But the whole purpose of this hour is to ask questions. So ask them. 800-848-9222. Now's a good time to get through. Usually the lines are overloaded, but I guess because we were our broadcast was disrupted a little bit. Folks got knocked off, but now you can go ahead and come on back. 800-848-9222. John is in the Catskills. Hello, John.
Yes, hi. A couple weeks ago there was a launch of a resupply rocket from Virginia to the space station. And I saw the stage separation from up here in the Catskills. It looked like New York City was getting nuked in the distance. I wonder how many people in New York City saw that?
I think we covered that with Dr. Sky yesterday. A guy from the Bronx called in, and he said he saw that out there. So I think that, I think probably a sizable number. I didn't see it. But that fellow that called in from the Bronx said that he did. So I'm guessing I couldn't tell you how big the number of folks in New York City that saw it. But clearly, I think more than you probably think. Pam is in Brooklyn. Hello, Pam.
Hi, Frank. I wanted to know if you know of all of the money that's taken in every day by the participating states in Lotto, Powerball, scratch-offs, do you know how that money is spent, where it goes, and is there someone who oversees the spending of that money?
Well, it's a great question. So the entity that oversees the money that comes in is the New York State Gaming Commission. They are they're the governing board. They oversee not just the money from the lotto, but horse racing, video lottery terminals, anything really, almost anything gambling wise in New York State. They control that. Now, the money is, it's very tricky what the state legislature does. The state legislature makes the budget. So the money that that the state gets from the lotto is supposed to be earmarked for education. And it then does go to education. But this is what the state legislature does. And I have to run, Pam. Thank you. They then subtract that amount from the general fund. So it's sort of a smoke and mirrors game. To be continued. Keep asking questions.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate you starting your Thanksgiving with me. Those of you that are on hold, I will get to you, even though we have ended the Ask Frank Anything portion of the show. Things were a little chaotic, so we didn't get to pick a winner. I want to use this opportunity, by the way, coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to take another look at the JFK assassination with author Lamar Waldron, who has written at length about this. Want to get his take as to what's going on with that whole situation. But I want to repeat something that I've done a couple of times over the last couple of years and get your feedback on something. I think a lot of you, a lot of us, are going to be spending Thanksgiving with relatives today. Immediate family, extended family, cousins, uncles, nephews, and chances are you're going to be interacting with people who feel very strongly about politics and in some cases probably have differing political views than you have. Now, obviously, I think the case with most families is you love the person that you're disagreeing with, but a lot of times what they say about a political issue just drives you crazy. This has always been the case, but I think it's gotten much more pronounced for a whole host of reasons over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. I would love to know your tips, because there's a lot of people listening to us right now, your tips for spending Thanksgiving with people whose politics you really disagree with. Give me a call, 800-848-9222. I have read this for the last 2 years on Thanksgiving, a set of guidelines from a group that used to be around. It's not really around anymore, called Unity, Unity 2.0. And I found the tips that they gave to be so helpful. And I'm going to repeat them, and then I'm going to ask you to give me your tips. And then there were a few other tips that I came across from, you know, from other sources as well, and I'm going to share them with you as well. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Now, what can you do to get along with people and to have, because I don't think the answer is to avoid political discussion. I think the answer is to discuss politics civilly, because that's the way you learn about what other people believe. Here are a few tips from Unity 2.0 that I found very helpful in term, and I've tried to utilize these not only at the Thanksgiving table, because look, I'm going to my mother-in-law's. My mother-in-law is an evangelical Christian, typical kind of Christian conservative. I have one brother-in-law who is very much kind of I don't know how you'd describe him. He is more of, I'll call him alt-right. You know, he might not appreciate that description, but he views everything the government does very skeptically. He's sort of an anti-establishment guy. I have another brother-in-law who I would consider a typical establishment Republican. I have a sister-in-law who is an Orthodox Jew, and I believe she's coming today, and she is very progressive, I believe. And so, and other people whose politics I don't necessarily know. Here are the tips from Unity 2.0 in terms of having meaningful discussions, and I'd love to add your tips to this. One, and I think this is so important, don't lecture. The dinner table is not a classroom. Few things put people off more than an unsolicited lecture. Think about what you're saying. Is it in response to a question asked by somebody else? Did somebody indicate that they want to know your views on the topic? If the answer to those questions is no, then you're probably lecturing. Great advice. Two, ask questions. Leading with questions instead of statements of fact is the best way to create conversation. Facts are loaded with associations and often lead us down this rabbit hole of sources. Asking questions requires your questioner to examine their reasoning and their values first. Humanize. Humanize. It's so easy to pigeonhole others into categories when talking about politics. However, just as issues are complex, so are people. Try to find common ground when you can, even if it's only tangentially related to the subject. If you both love pumpkin pie, make that a part of the conversation. This is so important, and I try to do this on the air. Some of you might have noticed with callers. Summarize their position. Before responding, try to articulate the position of the other person better than they did. This signals that you're listening, and it validates their opinion. Instigate doubt. We're more likely to question our beliefs if we feel that the doubt comes from ourselves. To spur an investigation into someone else's belief, feign ignorance and ask them to explain their position to you. By asking someone to define their own beliefs, any blind spots will become clear on their own terms, making them more likely to engage in deeper conversation. And then this might be most important, find a way out. Don't make the conversation about winning or losing. Instead, try to build a bridge between your points of view that you can both live with. If you have the courage to change your mind or concede on something, chances are whomever you're talking to will as well. I hope you take some of those points into account today. 800-848-9222 if you have any of your own tips. Axios had a couple of other tips in terms of having what they call productive arguments. So they said being good at disagreeing doesn't mean shouting louder or arguing harder. It means figure out when things are worth debating and how to debate them respectfully. The key points to keep in mind when trying to disagree well, a little humility goes a long way. We should remind ourselves that winning is something we worry about. We worry about on the football field and not with our friends and family. That's the word from Jim Otison, a professor of business ethics at Notre Dame. It's okay to let other people score points. Older generations especially value respect and can shut down if they feel disrespected. That's what Stanford Martin says. Try giving credit for salient points and leading with respect when debating with your older family members. You know, I have to tell you, I have tried this. Works brilliantly. Works absolutely brilliantly. Another one listed in the Axios piece on this is agree to disagree from the start. It's unlikely you'll change someone's view in one conversation, but the debate is still worth having. When you've acknowledged that you might not agree before the debate even begins, there's a lot less pressure to win and more desire to understand. Speak to your own experiences. Support your arguments with things you've personally witnessed or experienced instead of generalizations. And then, and this is so key, know when to let go. Not everyone is worth arguing with, and not every topic is worth debating. If someone doesn't want to listen and dominates the conversation, you could walk away. If you need to defuse the situation, try to what they call block and bridge. You could say, oh, that's interesting, without engaging with the point to block it and then bridge to a new topic. Bottom line is disagreement is inevitable. I think it's healthy. It's part of life. And when it's healthy, it makes our relationships and our communities stronger. And I think one of the things that has concerned me in the cable news era, in the social media era, and yes, maybe even in the talk radio era, is we now have to view people we disagree with as enemies. And that's not the case. I really love learning from people that I disagree with. If you have tips for getting along with people at the Thanksgiving table today that you don't see eye to eye with politically, whatever your politics are, whatever their politics are, call me and tell me, 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Tom in the Bronx. Hello, Tom.
Is that me, Fugazi?
Oh, it's the Fugazi, yeah. Tom. Even better. Hello.
Yeah, but yeah, I didn't know which one you're talking about. Okay, how you doing? As far as two men talking politics, right? My suggestion is instead of bragging about their power, how much money they can handle and work with, what they can do, they need to listen to each other's dislikes, all right? Like, I'm a Democrat, and the person sitting across from me is a Republican. I want to hear what he don't like about what I say I like. You know, instead of just saying I can do this, I want to know what you disagree with on how we should handle the city or state. And then I'll tell you what I agree with. And maybe, you know, maybe we can try to meld it together some kind of way. You know, I want to know what is it that you don't like about my advice. Okay. And talk about that first instead of talking about, I got this, you do this, you do this, because that's going to be an argument.
Well, I think, Tom, that makes a lot of sense. But what do you do if you're conversing with someone and they don't play essentially by those same rules?
Okay, well, you know what? The truth is the truth. The truth can't be denied. Okay, so if you shouldn't have your line, then you should be called out. But if you telling the truth and he knows what the truth is, then what, you know, all he can do is make himself look bad. Then it just don't come out fibbing, you know, stretching stories.
Yeah. Well, look, Tom, and thank you for the call, and a happy Thanksgiving. I don't, if you want to call in 800-848-9222 with your tips for getting along with people today that you disagree with, because I think the worst thing that would be to happen is for people to avoid discussing public affairs and civic affairs. I think healthy disagreements are just that, healthy, and they move the conversation along. In terms of what you said, if someone's lying, then X, Y, Z. It's not always, and I know this sounds weird, but it's not always clear if someone is intentionally lying. Because unfortunately, we're now in an era where someone might see something on social media. They might hear it on the radio. They might hear it from a friend. They may even read it in the paper and then think it's true. But if you follow the rabbit hole of the sources that they're getting that story from, that means it's not true. Now, one example, and I don't want to discuss January 6th at the moment just because it's a broader discussion. But one example is a friend of mine told me about a dinner that he was at recently where he was in a disagreement over, he said, I could have sworn that Donald Trump was offering all sorts of National Guard troops on January 6th, and Nancy Pelosi didn't take them. Now, that's not true. However, the source of that is true. The source of that is both first Donald Trump Jr. and Donald Trump. But the fact is, you know, the Speaker of the House, whoever that person is, has no ability to decline National Guard troops. So the fact that Donald Trump said it doesn't make it true, but there was someone who, you would think so, gave Donald Trump's views and words on that subject some credibility. So it's not that he was lying. He wasn't. He was assuming an accuracy of his source that wasn't there. Trump, for what it's worth, was either misinformed or he was not exactly telling the truth. So it is interesting, if you think about it, Thanksgiving's a fun holiday. It's also a holiday that doesn't have a lot of great Thanksgiving films. There's a few. You know, we played the Thanksgiving song earlier from Adam Sandler. He's in a very good Thanksgiving film called Funny People, which has a great Thanksgiving scene. Bill? No, Bill? Bill, can we play that? No. All right, never mind. But anyway, in terms of the history of Thanksgiving, you know what Abraham Lincoln and Thanksgiving have in common? They both all began with Sarah Josephia Hale. She was an author and an anti-slavery activist who saw Thanksgiving, then only a Northeastern custom, as a way to put aside sectional feelings and local incidents. For 17 years, Hale had unsuccessfully lobbied Presidents Taylor, Fillmore, Pierce, and Buchanan to officially recognize Thanksgiving as a national holiday before finally finding a receptive ear in President Abraham Lincoln, just months after the Battle of Gettysburg. That President Lincoln saw fit to dedicate time and political capital to the cause of making Thanksgiving a federal holiday in the midst of a civil war, it should tell us all we need to know about our own ability to come together despite our differences and break bread in peace. So I'd love to hear your tips on doing that. 800-848-9222. By the way, I believe Sarah Josephia Hale was also the person who was responsible for Mary Had a Little Lamb. I'm going to double check that. That was something that she had written. You believe that? All right, let me say hello to Mike on Long Island. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Frank, you're fantastic.
Thank you.
I just agree with a lot of what you're saying. Now, when it comes down to Thanksgiving dinner, that's a very, it's a tough thing because you're sitting down at the table with people who may not agree with every point that you have. I just think the best thing would be not to bring up, like, politics and stuff like that.
Well, see, so, I think that's a real shame because I think that really keeps people from learning from one another and having their views evolve.
That's very true, but it could get a little crazy, you know. And the other question I had was, what are your favorite Thanksgiving sides?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, you know, I really like mashed potatoes. I really like that. I came from, an Italian American household, or, I don't even like the term Italian American, but I came from a household that embraced an Italian cultural tradition and a culinary tradition. So a lot of the dishes that I like, a lot of the side dishes and appetizers especially, are not necessarily found in your typical American Thanksgiving meal. I love, for instance, stuffed artichokes. That's one of my favorites. I love, I love baked clams. You know, I love the fresh mozzarella. You know, I love all that kind of thing. What about you, Mike? What's yours?
Brussels sprouts with bacon.
Oh,
you ever do that?
I don't know that I have. I like Brussels sprouts.
They have to be roasted though in the oven.
Interesting. All right. Hey, I think you're inspiring a lot of creativity on the part of some people today, Mike. Have a happy Thanksgiving today. Appreciate it, and I hope you don't avoid discussing politics. Now, as I mentioned, 800-848-9222. The woman who wrote that classic nursery rhyme, "Mary Had a Little Lamb," she also played an integral role in making Thanksgiving a national holiday. After a 17-year letter-writing campaign, Sarah Josephia Hale convinced Lincoln to issue his decree in 1863. Imagine that, in the middle of the Civil War. Now, a lot of folks have looked at what they ate at the first Thanksgiving. And believe it or not, one of the key menu items was shellfish. And it lasted, I think, 3 days. But they had lobster. And that's why, turkey is fine if people like it, whatever people like. But I think that a much more appropriate way to honor the tradition of Thanksgiving is to serve lobster. I wish more households would do that. I say that selfishly because I'm a seafood fanatic. But if you think about it, Plymouth Bay was in Massachusetts, and a lot like modern-day New England, shellfish and fish were regularly consumed in those days. So according to historians, lobster was a big part of the menu. Mussels were a big part of the menu. Clams, eel, other fish, That was all present at the first Thanksgiving. And there was also venison. There was deer. They killed five deer and served at the first Thanksgiving. So there was no stuffing in all likelihood. There was no mashed potatoes. They did have turkey at the first Thanksgiving, but a lot of the other staples that have evolved into typical Thanksgiving cuisines, cranberry sauce and the like, pumpkin pie, they were not present at the first Thanksgiving. Shellfish was. Joe in Ronkonkoma. Joe, I saw you you sent me a note that you were a little under the weather this week. I hope you're feeling better.
I had bronchitis. I actually missed two nights, which I had never done before in my life. I'm feeling a lot better. They had to put me on steroids and stuff because of my lungs.
Oh, jeez.
Back to work, back at the chop. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way, to you, your wife, and Carmine, and a happy early birthday to him. What we usually do is we let people come into our house. Unless it gets crazy, Frank, and people start yelling and cursing at each other, we'll let people talk and have the freedom of speech,
Yeah, of course.
It would say. But like I told you a story, when I went to my in-laws, my wife gave me the speech, don't bring up politics. And I wasn't able in 2 minutes to keep my mouth shut. And they started talking politics. And they only one person disagreed, but everybody was respectful, which was nice. Before I go off, I want to just wish everybody in the WABC family and all the listeners a very happy, safe Halloween. And I'll talk to you next
week. Well, happy Thanksgiving. Halloween, if they didn't have a safe and happy Halloween, it's too late for them now.
I said, again, Frank, I must be Joe Biden in over here. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Best to you and your family. By the way, just talking about the history of that first Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving was initially meant to be not a feast, but a fast. The settlers at Plymouth Rock mostly recognized giving of thanks in the form of prayer and abstaining from food. But the American Indians who joined the Pilgrims for their 3-day celebration, they contributed their own harvest traditions, dancing, games, and yes, feasting from their ancient festival, Nikoma, meaning to give away or exchange. So it was kind of like a potluck. And did you know this? Thanksgiving, which is unlike Christmas or Easter or, a lot of other holidays, Thanksgiving was always typically considered an American holiday, but Thanksgiving was once celebrated in London. In 1942, London's Westminster Abbey held Thanksgiving services for U.S. troops who were stationed in England, and you had more than 3,500 soldiers filling the church's pews to sing America the Beautiful and the Star-Spangled Banner. It was the first time in the 900-year history of that church that a foreign army was invited to take over the grounds. And it was a very ironic gesture, given that the holiday's origins as a festival for pilgrims was all about fleeing religious persecution in England. And here they were in England celebrating it. 800-848-9222. Sarah Joe is in Maryland, WCBM land. Hello, Sarah Joe. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, shalom. I like Italian and Jewish food.
Wonderful.
I do like stuffed artichokes, stuffed mushrooms, knishes, gefilte fish, turkey, and I love Italian food.
You're making me hungry already, Sarah Jo.
Little Italy in Baltimore is very well known for Italian food. And Nancy, it comes from a political family. Her father and brother, Tommy D'Alessandro, her background, don't you?
I do indeed.
Well, you're very entertaining. I let WCBM know you were welcome, Master, too.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Actually, I called the other day. I was on a few weeks ago. I told you Baltimore was the land of pleasant living.
Yes, I remember
Baltimore's Charm City. Maryland's the land of pleasant living.
Got it.
And heard you talking to Sean Casey. I hope to come to New York in the spring because my dad was raised in Yonkers.
Well,
what's your background? I was just wondering. I don't know that much about WABC.
Well, what can I answer for you, Sarah Jo? I'm happy
what's
to. My blood type is A positive.
I mean, you're very educational. You really know your history. Of, I like Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song when you said about the Thanksgiving song.
Yeah, well, I do too, but, you know, it's not
Did
Hanukkah
Did you do
yet.
One on Thanksgiving too? I knew
yeah, I played song. It. I played it last hour. I don't know if you got to hear it. I know we had some technical issues. Sergio, did you have anything else you wanted to add with respect to how people can have a productive disagreement around the Thanksgiving table today?
Yes. Well, I don't have an immediate family, so I miss not having my parents and my brother.
Oh, well.
So
I'm
I have
sorry.
Friends, but I moved from Laurel to Baltimore, so it's hard to meet new people. I go to synagogue and other places. But Laurel's not that far away. You've heard of Laurel, where NSA is. And
absolutely.
You've been to the bottom area.
No, yeah, not in a while. I'm overdue for a visit. I'm going to try and schedule a trip there after the new year.
Well, WCBM, it may really stand for City of Baltimore, Maryland, but years ago, Elaine Stein that worked there told me that it was when Christ Blesses Multitudes.
Oh, well, I will get an answer on that from Sean and Mark and the good folks over at WCBM. Sergio, thanks for the call. Happy Thanksgiving, even whatever you end up doing today. We had a lot of great programming here on our station, so, you know, even if you just have the radio to keep you company, then I think that's a great thing. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Hello, Len.
Hey, Frank. Some truth is self-evident. It's transparent. It's obvious. I know a controlled demolition when I see one. Do you?
So you want to talk about September 11th and the World Trade Center?
Wow, you cut right to the chase, didn't you? I say that the denial of an obvious and transparent truth and the willingness to go along with a big lie stems from moral cowardice. What do you think?
Well, I don't agree, right? But I'm all for asking questions and having these discussions. What are you doing today, Len, for Thanksgiving, for instance?
I'll be going out to jog, for one thing, because I'm taking care of myself.
That's great.
I don't want to shoot experimental mRNA shots to take care of my immunity. I do it naturally.
But are you getting together with anybody today, for instance?
No, actually, I'll be celebrating alone, but I do have friends on social media. I
okay. Well, so let's say, Len, let's make it a hypothetical then. Next time you get together with a group of people, you bring up your belief, which...
it's not a belief. It's
okay.
A self-evident truth.
All right.
I know a controlled demolition
okay.
when
Len,
I see one.
Thank you.
And
Len.
So do you.
Len, so you bring up your self-evident truth that that the Twin Towers were... imploded, right?
Well, I know Building 7, the Salomon Brothers was definitely imploded. All of us know that. All of us admit that.
Okay,
and
right. So
by extension, it's pretty obvious that nothing could take down two skyscrapers like that with burning jet fuel. We all know that. We have enough basic science to know that. It doesn't take a lot of study. It ain't rocket science.
So
it's obvious.
Let's say
the question is, why did firemen, why did cops, why did construction workers, why did Port Authority staff go along with a big lie? Well, because it's a corrupt city and it's a corrupt society.
Len, thank you. Thank you. I am happy to have that discussion with you on September 11th, but not on Thanksgiving. I just can't. But what I was hoping to do, but you didn't want to let me talk, was talk about how you have the discussion that you were just trying to have with people that disagree. And, you know, I can understand why you didn't get an invite to anybody's Thanksgiving table today. Lamar Waldron joins me next. We'll talk about the John F. Kennedy assassination and where we go from here. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Mitski by this is a song by Mitski called Thursday Girl. Well, if you're a Thursday girl, this has got to be a great holiday for you. Am I right? Hey, this week we are also commemorating the 59th anniversary of the murder of President John F. Kennedy. Somebody who has been studying that for a long time, writing about it for a long time, is Lamar Waldron. He has been described as one of the best investigative journalists in the country. He's written several books, including The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. Lamar, happy Thanksgiving. I appreciate you joining me on a holiday.
Great to be with you again, Frank, and a happy Thanksgiving to you and all of your listeners, too.
So there are very few issues that kind of captivate the imagination and the attention of the public for 59 years straight. The JFK assassination happens to be one. Based on your research, what is your best guess about what occurred?
Well, it's not a guess. My collaborator Tom Hartman and I, we got the information directly from more than two dozen people who actually worked with John and Robert Kennedy back in 1963. And they basically started telling us what happened back in early 1990. We had to wait until a lot of them had passed away before we could write about it. But as Bobby Kennedy himself told close associates, including the man that he had do a secret private investigation for him, his close personal assistant in 1963, John Nolan, the mafia had killed his brother, because the Kennedy brothers, President Kennedy, Attorney General Robert Kennedy, they were waging the biggest war against organized crime America had ever seen in the early 1960s, because the mafia had basically its run of America back in the 1950s, its run of America and Cuba. So they had this big, very public war. This was in the newspapers every day. It was front page news and all the big newspapers and magazines. But they also had a very top secret private war against Fidel Castro at that same time. With this would be something most of your listeners don't know unless they've read one of my books. America was preparing for essentially another invasion of Cuba, set for December 1st, 10 days after Dallas, when the head of the Cuban army, the commander and founder of the Cuban army, Commander Juan Almeida, was going to essentially eliminate Fidel Castro and Raul Castro, blame their deaths on a Russian or a Russian sympathizer, because there were 11,000 Russians in Cuba at that time, and then Commander Almeida would invite the United States to send more troops into Cuba to prevent a Soviet takeover, because that was the height of the Cold War and just a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis, when we were hiding under our desks at school and we all thought we were getting blown up. So that was basically what was going on, this super-duper top-secret program that was never supposed to be revealed. And the mafia was able to infiltrate that top-secret program and use parts of that top secret program, including the way that the head of the Cuban army was going to kill Fidel and Raul, and use that instead against President Kennedy in Dallas in public, just the same way that Castro was going to be killed in public in his Jeep in Cuba. They did it to JFK in his limo in Dallas. And that forced the United States government into this huge cover-up that has lasted, as you just pointed out, all of these many decades, initially to prevent World War III, because it was Kennedy was killed just a year after that Cuban Missile Crisis. We didn't want to get blown up. But, of course, agencies do what agencies do. The FBI, CIA, Naval Intelligence, Secret Service, they all covered up so much information at the time from the Warren Commission and from the press and the public and from other officials. And then once you do that cover-up, they just kept covering it up. Congress passed this great law unanimously back in 1992, release all the JFK assassination files. Eventually, appointed this committee. President Bush appointed a committee, and they were going to release all the files, and they set this deadline. They released a bunch in the 90s, including some really great ones most people don't know about. And then they were going to release all the rest of them, you know, like in 2017, and then that deadline got kicked to 2018 and then 2019. And they're all supposed to finally be released on December 15th of this year, but I will boldly predict on your show, and I would be happy if I'm wrong, that none of the most important files will be released on December 15th, as the law requires. Obama didn't do it. Trump didn't do it. Biden had a deadline last year, and he let them release 10% of the files, but made them promise they'd release them all this December the 15th. The government agencies, long-term bureaucrats, not the politically appointed leaders, but, you know, people that have been in the agencies for 20 years, they've been covering up so much for so long, they're not going to let those files out, like the attempt to kill JFK in Tampa, Florida, in his motorcade there 4 days before Dallas, the secret naval intelligence investigation that exonerated Oswald, said he was incapable of doing the actual shooting because he was a terrible shot, or masterminding the assassination because, yeah, Oswald's no mastermind. And so files like that, you know, they're not going to release. But I spent more than 30 years tracking down what's in those files with the help of people who worked with John and Robert Kennedy. And so people can find out what's in those files if they read The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. And otherwise, you know, I mean, contact the White House, contact your members of Congress, contact your senators and say, hey, you know, you guys passed this law in 1992. Don't let these agencies do it again, because most of the people in those agencies are, you know, good people, great people, you know, that do a really tough jobs in the FBI and CIA and Secret Service. But, you know, you've got some long-term, you know, bureaucratic leaders that they just don't want that embarrassment, because it would be very embarrassing.
All right, Lamar, you said quite a bit there that I want to follow up on. I'm not sure where to begin. I guess first I'll begin with your prediction that they're going to find some reason not to disclose these files and release them to the public as they have been required to do under the law. And ironically, and I mentioned this the other day, one of the people that made that same prediction back in 1998 was Kermit Hall, who served on the Assassination Records sure. Review Board. This is what Kermit Hall said back in 98.
While the board is going away today, its work continues. The echo of our efforts will be heard literally for the next decade or longer. But it also depends, since some of these documents have been postponed in their release until the year 2017, and in some cases earlier, it depends on all of us to keep the people who are in the agencies feet to the fire, so that when those dates come for documents to be opened, that they don't shirk their legal and constitutional responsibility, and really the moral responsibility that's entailed in our actions in making sure that the American public has the opportunity to come to terms with the issue of whether or not its own government participated in the murder of the President of the United States back in the early 1960s.
A really interesting piece of audio from Kermit Hall. But you actually think that these documents, these 15 to 25,000 documents that they're refusing to disclose, you actually believe that you think that there's a smoking gun within those documents that will tell people the truth about what happened?
Oh, here's how I know there are. So Kermit Hall was one of the members of the JFK Assassination Records Review Board that Congress authorized. Bush appointed the members. They operated under Clinton. So this is all very bipartisan mm-hmm. stuff. And I was these files have been released, by the way. I was a secret informant for the review board and for the executive director and their investigators. So I made darn sure they knew about, say, for instance, the Tampa attempt. I wrote them. I got a TV program on the Discovery Channel that talked about that back in 92. Guess what the Secret Service did as soon as the review board investigators contacted them about these things this writer named Waldron had said on TV and had said to them? The Secret Service destroyed the files covering the Tampa attempt. Now, I mean, and we're talking even newspaper clippings. You know, that's in the report of that organization whose, you know, member you just played that incredibly great clip from. And so, but here's some great news for your listeners. You know, the Tampa attempt, it's covered in exactly one newspaper article that came out the day after JFK was shot. You know, I talked to the Tampa chief of police, the guy who was chief of police at that time, and other members of this, so I got that whole information. But The Secret Service destroyed those files, but I know they kept other files. They gave copies of their files, in some cases, to the FBI, to the CIA, and to Naval Intelligence that operated there in Tampa. And so the files exist. I'll give you another great example, that Naval Intelligence investigation. Two separate independent sources, one who worked on it, one who saw the final report. And I told the review board about it. The review board investigators, they went to Naval Intelligence. Naval Intelligence appointed a young officer as their liaison, said, hey, this officer will get you everything you want. When that officer started looking for those files, Naval Intelligence drummed that officer shamefully out of the service.
Wow. Wow.
And initially, Naval Intelligence would not even would not submit their statement of compliance to the review board under oath. You know, they would, because they knew it was fake. But get this, that Naval Intelligence investigation that exonerated Oswald, that still exists. So these files exist. I'm confident they will not be released on December 15th because most of them are not even on the list of files to be released. The number you mentioned, the 15,000 or so documents. What most of your listeners don't know is a document in government parlance can be 1,000 pages, 5,000 pages, 20,000 pages. NBC News, when the review board, that Kermit Hall clip you played, NBC News reported right after that there were 1 million CIA records alone that had not been released as the law required. Notice they didn't say pages of records. They said records. So we're not talking 5 or 10 or 20 smoking gun documents. All the documents, 99.9% of the documents about that top secret coup plan that was supposed to happen, they aren't even on the list of files to be released because we're still in a top secret Cold War with Cuba. You know, so they have all these justifications, these agencies do. But
My favorite was the Biden justification of COVID. They couldn't release these documents because of COVID. If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Lamar Waldron. He has written and investigated the JFK assassination for years. He's also the author of several books dealing with it, including The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. And Lamar, on Tuesday, I spoke with Larry Schnapf, the attorney who has filed the lawsuit trying to get these documents released. This is what he said about the importance of the lawsuit and why these documents need to be released. Why did you choose to pick this one? Why file the lawsuit over these records being released?
Well, the Congress said 30 years ago that 30 years was enough, and they want an expeditious review release of the records, and they gave till October 26th, 2017 to release the rest of the records. The records that were not released when the Assassination's Records Review Board went out of business in 1998 were held back on the grounds that they posed an identifiable risk to national security, and they were to be – they figured another 25 years would be enough time to then release them. Well, in 2017, October 2017, President Trump postponed the release of the records for 6 more months. And then in 2018, he then further released, postponed the release for another 3.5 years. Now, I have a separate lawsuit that was filed against the National Archives. And while I was seeking the underlying correspondence in those decisions to postpone the records, and what the American people don't know, the public record is that the National Archives recommended to the president both of the postponements and said both postponements comply with the law. But the records I have received shows that the National Archives actually objected to the grounds for postponement that were being asserted by the CIA and the FBI. The FBI has about 7,400 records they're holding back, and 6,000 of them involve the mafia.
Let me ask you, Lamar, it seems like the legal basis and the legal rationale for this lawsuit is pretty sound. Why are you then so pessimistic that we won't be successful in getting these records released?
Well, by the way, I totally support that lawsuit. I've traded emails with Larry before, and I know some of the other attorneys involved. So they did a great job with the lawsuit because it got in the news you know, it got on NBC News, all of it. You know, so filing a lawsuit's a good way to get publicity. It did that. You know, the legal system can take years and years and years and years. The CIA, you know, they've been withholding files. The last case, Brett Kavanaugh decided as a member of an appeals court, was to say basically in a decision, this is right before he got nominated to the Supreme Court, that the CIA didn't have to follow that law. The CIA could assert anything it wanted to. I'll give you another example. There's a big, I think there's a podcast series on CNN about was James Brown murdered or not, okay? So people working on that, they filed a Freedom of Information request for records about James Brown that the CIA had. The CIA came back and said within the last couple of years, oh, we can't release these James Brown's records because it's a matter of national security. It would harm the national defense. I will guarantee your listeners there is not one CIA record about the singer James Brown that would in any way harm national defense. So we really don't have, you know, Kavanaugh's now in the Supreme Court. We don't have a Supreme Court that's going to enforce the law. You know, Congress is now divided. Will they do it? Mitch McConnell got his start as a low-level staff member on the Warren Commission. On the other hand, Senator Charles Grassley, now he said publicly he wants to see those files released. Boy, what a great thing if the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate could work together. You know, and hold public hearings, you know, get Larry and others in front
sure.
of the
absolutely
American people.
That would be great.
And investigations.
And people forget the Congressional Select Committee of the 1970s did show by their own conclusion, they essentially refuted the Warren Commission report. They found that there was a conspiracy. And that was a congressional committee back in the 70s when a lot of these documents weren't released. Lamar.
And they named two people. They named the godfather of Texas and Louisiana, Carlos Marcello, and the godfather of Tampa, Florida, Santo Trafficante Jr., as having the motive, means, and opportunity to have assassinated President Kennedy as part of that very conspiracy that you said they founded. And yet,
Lamar, I have to run way late here, but the final question, you talk about Oswald being exonerated. Do you believe, or does your research show, I should say, that Oswald was not part of the assassination plot at all, or just that he did not fire the fatal shots that killed Kennedy?
Well, I don't want to go much beyond what the Naval Intelligence Report says, but, you know, basically he was not a knowing member of the assassination plot. He thought he was going to Mexico City that day and then on to Cuba is a low-level member of a part of this, you know, top-secret coup plan. So that's what he was focused on.
Got it. Hey, Lamar, I hope we could talk again soon. I really appreciate the time this morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your listeners. Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you. If you want to comment, 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Young Pilgrims by the Shins. I'll tell you, one of the things that's nice about Thanksgiving is it's one of the few days where you really get to play all of the pilgrim-themed songs, right? All right, 800-848-9222. I am going, after the shows that I am doing today, we are going to be driving out to my in-laws out on Long Island, looking forward to spending Thanksgiving with them. And I believe we're spending the night out there and then come back tomorrow. And I think a big part of Friday is going to be preparing. We're having a first birthday party for my son Carmine on Saturday. So we're going to spend some time working on that. And I can tell my wife is already preparing to be agitated and annoyed with me the next 48 hours for not sufficiently helping. And then I have to get a lot of work done for New Year's Eve because every year, every December 30th, I throw this big gala New Year's Eve party in Atlantic City, and I am still way behind on stuff that needs to get done. So I'm hoping to make some progress on that front on Friday. 800-848-9222. Bob in Yonkers. Bob, got about 45 seconds here. They're all yours.
Yeah, Frank, good morning. Like I said last night, I called last night, it's the embarrassment factor that these agencies will never, ever let that information be released. And then what's sad is, if they lied about this this incident, what else have they lied about that the government was involved in?
You know, that's a great question, Bob, and a great point. Bob, thank you very much. All right, coming up next hour, we have denunciations, and we're going to do a kind of an offbeat edition of the AC Report, inviting people to call in from Atlantic City and tell us what's happening there this Thanksgiving. Because if there's any place that does Thanksgiving right, it's Atlantic City, am I right? All right, until next hour, in the words of the great Bob Barker, help control the pet population. Get your dog or turkey spayed or neutered.
Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Appreciate you listening to us on this Thanksgiving edition of The Other Side of Midnight. And if you want to jump on board, you could do so, 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. We're going to do denunciations in just a moment. And you can give a listen to what we're doing if you miss any portion of the show just by subscribing to the podcast. Just search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano on any podcast app. Hit the subscribe button. I was wondering if we should do denunciations today for two reasons. One, you know, it's a holiday. It's Thanksgiving. It's about giving thanks. It's about being positive, all that stuff, religious freedom and so forth. Just to hear me list 9 or 10 entities that are worthy of your rebuke, is that fitting with the holiday? And then I thought, well, you know what? People are going to be getting together with relatives and friends today, and they're going to need something to talk about. So one of the things that I do with denunciations is try to find different stories that you might not have been exposed to throughout the rest of the week, make you aware of them so that you are well-informed. So I decided to do it, and since I'm not here tomorrow, I believe my colleague Curtis Sliwa is going to be filling in, so better buckle up for that. You can, I figured it would get it out of the way today. 800-848-9222. We're going to do denunciations in just a moment, but Teresa in New Jersey has been patiently holding. Hello, Teresa.
Hi, Frank. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there.
Thanks, Teresa. You too.
Thank you. I have the perfect all-time holiday song. Just a suggestion. Kenny Loggins, Celebrate Me Home. I believe Mark Levin likes to whistle to it once in a while. Absolutely gorgeous song.
You know, I can't picture it, Teresa. Can you whistle a few bars yourself for us?
I'm not real good at singing. And my
You don't have to sing. Give us a hum or a whistle.
Oh, please celebrate me home. It's a lovely song.
That's nice. I'll check it out. Give me the title again, and if people want to hear it, they can look it up if they're getting together with folks.
Done by Kenny Loggins,
mm-hmm.
and the name of the song is Celebrate Me Home.
Celebrate Me Home. Okay.
Yes. Now, one other thing, quickly.
Sure.
There are a lot of people out there that don't have families. You know the rap I'm going to go into. Please, everyone, if you have a neighbor who's alone, an elderly person, if you have the time, go out, buy a pumpkin pie for them, knock on their door, say hello, try and take a little time, go to one of the soup kitchens, help out a little bit, do something, you know. There's a lot of people who are going to be really hurting today.
Teresa, that's great advice. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later as well. I'm glad you mentioned that,
though.
All right, sweetheart. Happy Thanksgiving,
Teresa. You have a wonderful
Teresa.
Holiday.
Appreciate
and
it.
And everyone else out in the audience.
You
Thank
too.
You.
Thank you, Teresa. Kenny Loggins, there you go. Kenny Loggins had that great song in Caddyshack, right? But who knows? He had some great Thanksgiving hits as well. All right, without further ado, it is time for...
The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciation.
I must denounce the growing list of Oregon sheriffs who are telling their constituents that they will not enforce voter-approved gun restrictions, despite not yet knowing how some aspects of the law will work and not having a clear role on in enforcing others. For instance, on a November 9th Facebook post, Linn County Sheriff Michelle Duncan said that Measure 114, which 50.7% of voters approved the day before, is a terrible law for gun owners, crime victims, and public safety. The measure would require a permit to buy a firearm and ban magazines holding more than 10 rounds. And she is essentially saying, I want to send a clear message to Linn County residents that the Linn County Sheriff's Office is not going to be enforcing magazines capacity limits. Now, understand, these sheriffs, and she's not the only one, there are a bunch of others, they're saying that even though this law was just passed, she's not going to enforce it. And not just her, but a bunch of others. Now, I hope everybody that's on the right that was upset with that memo Alvin Bragg put out, the Manhattan DA, I hope they will be equally upset with these rogue sheriffs refusing to enforce the law. Because just as the case with Alvin Bragg or Melinda Katz or Eric Gonzalez or Larry Krasner, when you take an oath to uphold the Constitution, to uphold the law and to enforce the law, you don't get to pick and choose which ones you want to enforce and not enforce. And that is what these rogue sheriffs are trying to do. So if you don't like the law, you should work to change it. Maybe run for the state legislature, or maybe try and get it on the ballot again so you can make a better case against it. If you think the law is unconstitutional, by all means, challenge the constitutionality of that in the courts. But for these sheriffs to just simply on their own decide not to enforce the law, I think that's atrocious. And I would be saying this irrespective of the ideology of the law enforcement officials involved. So if you're a sheriff that's refusing to enforce the laws of your community, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the major tax prep sites, H&R Block, Tax Slayer, and Tax Act, because these tax firms have been selling your data without your consent to Facebook. These tax firms are using the Megapixel, a curiously named chunk of embedded JavaScript supplied to Meta, supplied by Meta to websites in return for money. And the more of your personal data Meta is able to slurp up, the more money these companies get in exchange. See, you are the product. And so these companies are making money selling your data without your consent. But these services, H&R Block, Tax Act, Tax Slayer, they're not free. So you're getting screwed on the front end and the back end. First of all, I believe we should have return-free filing in the system, in this country as far as taxes go. But you're paying for a service. They do an adequate job, apparently, with the service itself. And then, without your knowledge or consent, they're selling this data to Facebook. You're not getting any money from it. If somebody's going to get money from your data, it should be you, not H&R Block. So for these tax prep firms that are screwing their own customers for money, I do denounce you. I must also denounce Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, this guy is a real piece of work. He just keeps lowering the bar. The polarizing wide receiver posted a naked photoshopped picture of Gisele Bündchen to his Snapchat on Monday. The image in question no longer appears on Brown's account, though it's unclear if it was removed by him or the social media giant. I'm betting it was by Snapchat. In response to an inquiry about Brown's alleged post, Snapchat noted its policy against nudity. The company's community guidelines state, we prohibit accounts that promote or distribute pornographic content. So Brown's latest post adds to a string of bizarre social media attacks against Tom Brady and his now ex-wife, which began in October. At the time, the 34-year-old Antonio Brown shared a photo of him and Bündchen on Instagram that featured the pair celebrating after the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl. Brown also posted an older photo of Bündchen with her arms around Brady, but with Brown's head photoshopped over the quarterback. So around the same time that Brady and Bündchen announced their divorce, Brown found himself in the headlines again when he tried to sell a T-shirt that featured a photo of him and Bündchen from the 2021 Super Bowl. He has continued to share critical social media posts about Brady following his release from the Buccaneers. Brown was let go by the team after his unceremonious shirtless exit during a Jet game at MetLife Stadium that some of you may remember. It's clear to me, I don't know the nature of it, but it's clear to me that Brown and Brady had a falling out of sorts as this, but there's no reason that Gisele Bündchen should be the target of essentially cyberbullying just because Antonio Brown doesn't get along with her ex-husband. To me, it's low class. It's a very poor example for children that have enough problems with social media to begin with. And you know, as a professional athlete, a lot of children are going to follow your lead on this stuff, especially teenagers. I did, right? I wanted to do the kind of thing that athletes that I liked were doing. And for him to be engaging in this kind of conduct, I find it reprehensible. So once again, and I'm sure I've denounced him before, but Antonio Brown, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the state of Montana. I've never been there, but I have no problem denouncing them. They are the worst state in the entire country for drunk driving. That's right. I can't understand in this day and age why anybody is drinking and driving. Now, I'm all for drinking. I'm all for driving. But in the era of Uber and Lyft, and I recognize you might have to wait a little longer for an Uber in Montana than you have to do in Brooklyn. But I can't understand why you would ever do this. If you know you're going to drink, just take an Uber or whatever vehicle or car and then really get tanked, right? But Forbes Advisor looked to determine which states have the highest and lowest rates of drinking and driving. They compared the 50 states and the District of Columbia across six key metrics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the FBI. They also surveyed 5,000 drivers to ask about their experiences with drunk driving during the holidays. Montana topped the list of states with the highest rate of drunk driving. Big Sky Country. Big Sky Country topped the list with sobering statistics. 8.39 drunk drivers were involved in a fatal car crash for every 100,000 licensed drivers. That's staggering. Absolutely staggering. 6.9 people were killed in a crash involving a drunk driver for every 100,000 state residents. Those are both the highest in the country. Nearly half of Montana traffic deaths in 2020 were caused by drunk drivers. That also is the highest in the country. The state had the second highest number of drunk drivers under the age of 21 involved in fatal crashes. It had the 10th highest number of DUI arrests per 100,000 drivers. The survey revealed that Montana drivers tied with New Mexico for being the 11th most likely to say they've seen a friend or family member drive home after appearing intoxicated after a family party. Guys, drinking and driving is no joke, right? And the fact that it seems to be such a problem in Montana, seems to be a serious indication that they're doing something wrong out there. Hey, this, so Montana, big sky country, I do denounce you. I must also denounce intermittent fasting. I do this pretty regularly. So I am sorry to denounce this, but I have to. Because this is basically the practice of not eating, right? You go, you fast for 2 days, you eat for five, or you fast for 16 hours and you eat for eight. It's a very trendy thing, and I do it. I feel like it helps, but the more I've learned about it, the less it seems to help. So there's a new study which shows that intermittent fasting may actually raise your risk of an early death by 30%. This study tracked 24,000 Americans over the age of 40 from across the country for 15 years. This is a real study. It compared the intermittent fasters. It compared to three, one meal a day. Compared to three, one meal a day, like my friend Jay Diamond does, linked to 30% raised risk of all causes of death. Skipping breakfast, which is what I do. I always think I'm being healthy. I'm not going to overeat. Skipping breakfast was linked to a higher chance of dying from heart disease. But missing lunch or dinner appeared to raise the risk of deaths from any cause. And these results were constant, even if people exercised, ate healthily, and rarely smoked. So I am thinking twice about intermittent fasting, I'll tell you that. My friend Vinny is a big intermittent faster as well. I want to denounce this unnamed New Hampshire man from Cheshire County. He is facing multiple charges after shooting a turkey from his car window. You hear what I said? He did a drive-by on a turkey. That's according to the New Hampshire Fish and Game Law Enforcement Division and the anti-poaching program Operation Game Thief. The man, who was not identified, used a 9mm handgun, according to the agency. Where do they find these people? You remember Richard Bay used to say that on his TV show. We'd run up to the camera and say, where do they find these people? Using a 9mm to shoot a turkey that you see on the street, essentially? Well, to anybody that engages in this drive-by turkey murder, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the University of Florida. They have rescinded a football scholarship offer to a high school prospect for using the N-word while rapping along with a song. Yes, you heard me correctly. Standout quarterback Marcus Stokes posted a video of himself mimicking the lyric as he rode in a car, and the song's on the radio. Welcome back, N-word, he can be heard saying in the since-deleted two-second video. He was in the car listening to rap music, rapping along to the words, and he posted a video of it to social media. He apologized. He said, I deeply apologize for the word in the song, which I chose to say. They rescinded his scholarship over this. This is, I think, a dramatic overreaction. The guy was singing along with a song. He wasn't, and he apologized. He didn't go around calling people the N-word. And I'm not saying he shouldn't have some sort of a public sanction here, but the guy apologized. You're going to take away the kid's scholarship because of this? This kid's whole life is now changed, ruined, essentially, because of a very popular rap song that he posted a video of himself singing and dancing to. And that's not right. So, University of Florida, I do denounce you. I don't know how to pronounce this word. I don't even know if it is a word. But I'm going to have to denounce the word bae. B-A-E. This is big with the young people, this word. And this has been named the most annoying slang word of the year 2022. The word is B-A-E, and it's a term of endearment or labeling something as good or cool. The next most annoying idiom of the year is on fleek. I don't find that as that bad. Third most annoying is by Felicia. Okay, that's a little annoying. But I am with them on bay being the most annoying word of the year. Whenever I get that word in a text, I don't even know what it means. So, bay, I do denounce you. Penultimately, I must denounce everybody today, and I've already gotten one, and the day is only relatively young. I want to denounce anyone that sends a group text message to everyone in their phone wishing them a happy Thanksgiving. Now, again, I send group text messages. I like group text messages, okay? But if I get a group text message from a number that's not saved in my phone, clearly you and I are not interacting with one another enough that you should really care if I have a happy Thanksgiving. And then the worst is then your phone pings with all these other people wishing a happy Thanksgiving. So now I'm getting a happy Thanksgiving from essentially a stranger and then a whole bunch of other strangers. And all that does is drown out the people that I do want to hear from in terms of getting a happy Thanksgiving from. So don't do that. You know, I mean, call someone up. Send them an individual text. Send them an email. I got a couple of nice Thanksgiving cards from people, not just from me, but for Carmine. So thank you for that. And finally, I want to denounce Lindsay Abul of Canton, Ohio. This woman is reprehensible. Not only am I glad she's going to prison, but this is the kind of woman that should be denounced on the radio and ultimately, I think, probably go to hell. This is a woman who faked her daughter's terminal illness to get $5,000 in donations. She has been sentenced to 4 to 6 years in prison and ordered to pay back over $8,500 in restitution. She previously pled guilty to child endangerment and theft. These charges stemmed from a scam GoFundMe campaign called Riley's Warriors, which raised $5,000 before being shut down. She falsely claimed on the page that her 11-year-old daughter suffered from a central nervous system disease and that her brain was shutting down. And this campaign gained some traction. Lindsay Abul and her daughter even appeared on a local news station to share their story. And at the time, Abul claimed that her daughter, whose identity has been protected due to her age, was forced to give up on her dream of playing softball. It's not true. None of this was true. And the scheme was shut down last year when a tipster alerted authorities that the mother was misleading her daughter and the public in order to obtain trips, housing, and other expenses over the last few years. Guys, I recognize how difficult it is to make ends meet, but this to me is not just criminal. It's such a poor example for your child. For you to exploit your child and take advantage of them that way, I think is just awful. And to this woman, I do denounce you, Lindsay Abul. All right. If you want have comments on any of my denunciations, you're welcome to give me a call, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. We are going to, we usually do the AC report right around this time on Thursdays, but we're going to do something a little different. We're going to invite people in Atlantic City and the surrounding communities to just call in and tell us what's going on there in Atlantic City today for Thanksgiving, what they're doing, and sort of give a general sense of the move. You're welcome to comment on other issues as well. 1-2-3-4-5. 6 open lines, 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciations.
Well, we are done with denunciations, so we are moving right along. 800-848-9222. I got an SMS text message here. I'm not going to mention who this is from, but a very prominent New York City elected official just sent me an SMS text message in response to the denunciations saying, just denounce all group texts. They all suck the same way. So there you go. I am not going to go that far. I like a good group text. I like starting a good group text. One of my favorite things to do is put people who don't necessarily know one another but have something in common on a group text, and then inevitably all of them will start texting me individually to ask them who the other people are on the group text. I like that degree of confusion. But I don't send a generic Happy Thanksgiving group text to my whole phone. To me, that is just a different world. All right. Usually around this time, we spend some time looking at what's happening in Atlantic City, and we're going to do that. But we're inviting everybody who is in South Jersey, Atlantic County, to call in and give us their take on what they're observing, what they're hearing from, what they're seeing. 800-848-9222, 1-800-848-9222. One of my favorite people to talk to as part of the AC report is Chuck Darrow, a distinguished journalist who's been covering casino gaming for a long time. He's going to be one of our honorees this year for New Year's Eve. Chuck, it's great to talk with you. Happy Thanksgiving.
What do you say, Franco? Right back at you, baby. Gobble, gobble.
Exactly. Hey, so what's on your agenda today? What are you doing?
Just having a very small gathering. A couple of my wife's people will be coming over. We used to, back in the day when the kids were young and still living at home or in the area, we wouldn't have any other relatives were still alive. We've had as many as 26, 27 people. And, you know, I don't know if it's unfortunate, but it's a fact of life that we're down to six now this year, which is okay, too.
Yeah, sometimes a smaller party can be nice, a little more intimate, a little less work for everybody.
I got to tell you that, I mean, I love Thanksgiving, but it really isn't as much of a big deal or whatever, as important as it is to so many other Americans. As it is to me, it's not quite, because when I was a kid, not a little kid, but by the time I was in high school, my parents kind of always went away on Thanksgiving or more often than not, and just left me on my own. And I don't mean like by myself, but I would go to my grandmother's, I would go to a friend's house. So to me, Thanksgiving is not that big of a deal. I mean, it's just, I enjoy it. I love, secular holidays.
Right. Well, so do you consider Thanksgiving secular or religious?
No, not at all. It's not religious at all. I mean, there's no prayer said.
Well, I mean, it is in that the pilgrims, you know, came here for religious freedom.
Right. Oh, well, right. Of course. But the celebration itself, the observance itself, takes place in the home, not in the church.
Right.
Synagogue.
Sure.
Yeah, there is no ritual. I mean, you know, like a Passover Seder, for instance.
Right.
Yeah, so, no, and it's, I mean, I again, don't get me wrong, I love Thanksgiving, although the night before Thanksgiving ain't too shabby either.
That's for sure. That is for sure. Hey, what is, for people around the country listening, Chuck, what is Atlantic City like on Thanksgiving? What goes on there? What's the scene at the boardwalk? You ever go into any of the casinos? Are the restaurants busy?
You know, I mean,
I've never been on Thanksgiving.
Well, nor have I, for obvious reasons. I've been down there a lot on the night before Thanksgiving, including, most incredibly of all, in 1978 at resorts when I got to see the Honeymooners live. I don't know if you know that. Not that I don't want to go on a tangent.
I love the Honeymooners.
Great. Well, I mean, that's my religion. We sit around and we do Honeymooners lines. That's our religious experience.
That's great. I was just playing the other day the Honeymooners rap that my friend Joe Piscopo did years ago with Eddie Murphy.
Who? Oh, that's and that's actually, you know, Joe is one of my dearest friends. I mean, my kids grew up calling him Uncle Joe. And when we first met, that was our entry point into our friendship. The very first time we met, we just did Honeymooners lines because I didn't know much about. I mean, I knew he was on SNL. And I knew, but I also knew he was a Honeymooners fanatic. But anyway, so on Thanksgiving Eve of 78, the last Honeymooners special back in the 70s for several years, the Honeymooners cast got back together, Gleason, Art Carney, I guess Audrey Meadows was back. And then, now I can't, of course, remember. It wasn't Jane Keane. Oh, no, actually, I guess it was Sheila McRae and Jane Keane who played Trixie. Sheila McRae might have played Alice. Anyway, so ABC.
No, Alice was Audrey Meadows.
No. In, at the very end.
Oh, okay. Got it. My mistake.
When they were doing the ABC specials. And they did, like, I guess one a year, whatever, one every 10 months. And on the last one they ever showed was on Valentine's Day. It was a Valentine's Day special, 78. And it was taped. They did a week four or five nights, Tuesday through Saturday or Sunday, November 78. They did it at resorts. That's where they taped it, in the Superstar Theater there. And I amazingly got to see the Wednesday night performance, and it remains still, again, to talk about religion. I mean, to be under the same roof with those
people. Oh, that's pretty neat. That's pretty neat.
Actors. And, you know, and to see that set, of course, in color, which I guess I have because it's been in color on TV. Yeah, but still, just to be in the same physical space as those actors on that set was, I mean, just mind blowing. But for instance, they do on Thanksgiving. You can, several of the casinos do offer Thanksgiving meals. You know, for $35 or $40, you get soup and salad and
are they crowded? Are the casinos crowded on Thanksgiving?
I think it's more like it is on Christmas. Mm-hmm. I think where I have been there, where during the day, not so much, but by 7, 8, 9 o'clock, people are done. The weekend has started.
Sure.
And not everybody's shopping, especially these days, because they can, you know, go on their phone or their laptop and shop, and they get bored. They get cabin fever. I mean, the dishes are done. They've had enough of the relatives. And they want to do something. And they also, I mean, there is, I don't know exactly what the occupancy rate is, but certainly there are plenty of people who are actually staying over. And of course, the restaurants are open and the casinos.
Yeah. And what's the scene on the boardwalk like?
I would just say my guess would be that depends on the weather. Or even today, it's supposed to be in the 50s in South Jersey and sunny. So I would imagine. But
nice.
Remember, too, though, that a lot of the stores are closed for the winter.
Sure.
They're not opening up just for that one day. It doesn't make any sense, though. So I don't think that there's a real scene on the boardwalk. Certainly Steel Pier is closed for the season. And I don't believe they're opening. So it's kind of subdued, but inside, especially, I would imagine, you know, like Borgata and Hard Rock, and even Tropicana, where there's a lot going on.
Yeah,
where it's more than just a casino and restaurants. But yeah, it'll be pretty lively.
It sounds great. Chuck, have a great Thanksgiving. Appreciate you getting up early to give us an update.
My pleasure. We'll see you soon, man.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Great to talk to you.
Count on it. Chuck Darrow, great casino journalist. 800-848-9222. By the way, also, if you have questions about Atlantic City, now's as good of a time as any to ask it. You're talking a lot about Thanksgiving and the history of Thanksgiving as well. You know, it's interesting. One of the segments that I traditionally do, and I've done it so many years over the last 10 years, I'm not going to do a whole thing, is trying to make a list of the best Thanksgiving films. And the reason I stopped is because every year we end up with the same 10 or 11. And maybe every year there's one that's added to it, because one of my great frustrations is that Thanksgiving movies, much like Thanksgiving music, are very rare, at least in comparison to Christmas, which bigfoots everything happening entertainment-wise. You think of how many more people celebrate Thanksgiving in America than celebrate Christmas. I mean, think of all the people whose religious traditions don't include Christmas. Most of them celebrate Thanksgiving. They say only about 12% of the population in America doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving. And yet, when it comes to music, when it comes to movies, there's a few very good Thanksgiving films. You got Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You have a great film called Dutch. A lot of different fields of things. The Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore, if you like comedy. Adam's Family Values is certainly terrific. There's a lot of films that have very good Thanksgiving scenes. You know, this is one of those areas where I think television has actually, I hate to say it, done a better job than cinema. If you look at all these classic TV shows, usually almost all of them have a great Thanksgiving episode. Whatever your favorite show is, right? Chances are they probably have a great Thanksgiving episode. You think about The Sopranos, for instance. You think about Boston Legal. You think about Cheers. That's one of my favorite Cheers episodes, the Thanksgiving episode. But there are a lot of good films with Thanksgiving scenes in them. I was talking earlier about Funny People with Adam Sandler, which may be my favorite Adam Sandler film, and that has a classic Thanksgiving scene in it.
You want to say grace or anything?
Leo's a good writer, apparently. Come on, get up there.
I'm okay.
All right, let me go. Let me get it done.
Okay, so first let's give thanks to our families not being here. Always easier without the family. It's funny, I see you guys, and you are just so much younger than me. And I had no idea I was the old guy until I looked at you guys. It was like when I was growing up. I had a big nose. I had no idea until I went to the Gap and saw a three-way mirror, and I was like, wow. I didn't know I had that thing. Yeah, no, it's good to be young. Kind of sucks being old. So just enjoy this. Enjoy time. Time slips away, I promise you. I had a dinner like this 20 years ago with guys that we just, like, lost touch with each other. I never talked to them anymore. Some of them are dead. So, things slip away. If you love somebody, don't let them slip away. I swear to you, this will be your most memorable Thanksgiving, the one that you'll want the rest of your life, the one that you say, man, it was never as good as that night. So let this night be great. Enjoy the taste of Leo's ball.
And that is one of the great scenes in that film. Other than Uncut Gems, that is definitely my favorite Adam Sandler performance. Thanksgiving, though, pardon the pun, was a slow roasting holiday. The first Thanksgiving was held in 1621. It really took a while before the whole continent, the whole country, started celebrating it. In 1789, George Washington hailed the holiday, but Thomas Jefferson, who came a few years after him, he scoffed at the notion. He called Thanksgiving, quote, the most ridiculous idea ever conceived. Now, you think about other founding fathers and their views on Thanksgiving. Benjamin Franklin was once such a fan of turkey that the rumor is, it's not exactly true, there's a little bit more. As so many stories about the founding fathers, there's a little bit more nuance and context to it. The rumor, though, was that Ben Franklin wanted to make Thanksgiving the national bird. And, of course, the eagle is the national bird. There are three towns that have been named for the key player in Thanksgiving, turkey. There's a Turkey, Texas, a Turkey Creek, Louisiana, and a Turkey, North Carolina. Each one of them, though, has less than 500 residents. Apparently, they say that the name of the turkey came from Christopher Columbus, who thought he was in India. And when he arrived in the New World and he dubbed this little pheasant that he saw a tuca, that was an Indian term for a peacock. And apparently the name stuck. And, who knows if that's true. 800-848-9222. David is in the Bronx. Happy Thanksgiving, David.
Yes, same to you, Frank.
Thanks.
I wanted to mention something. When I was growing up in the 70s and the early 80s, on Thanksgiving, it was a tradition in my family. Channel 9 used to do a King Kong marathon on Thanksgiving. They would show the original King Kong, Son of Kong, and Mighty Joe Young. And then the following day, it would be Godzilla Day. And this went on throughout the 70s, and I think it stopped sometime in the early 80s. But for us, that was our those were our Thanksgiving movies.
I love
it. They weren't Thanksgiving themed.
Well, that's the thing is sometimes, you know, these films, just because they're showed every year, you begin associating that with the holiday. I think the same thing was true of E.T. for many years. Really, when I was growing up, E.T. was something that was on every year. And now I think they show Home Alone every year. So even though E.T. and Home Alone aren't on Thanksgiving, to your point about the King Kong films and or Godzilla, the fact that they were shown every year, it kind of makes them a de facto Thanksgiving film.
Right. Same thing with, and I'm sure you've probably seen this, Laurel and Hardy's March of the Wooden Soldiers.
Sure. Babes in Toyland. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah, have a happy holiday, Frank, and happy birthday to your son.
Thanks very much, David. Appreciate it. 800-848-9222. Holly is in Manhattan. Hello, Holly.
Oh, hi there. Hi there.
Hi.
You keep saying that there's no Thanksgiving music.
No, not
what
no.
Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant.
Yeah, that's a good one, and that's on my list to play today. I just say there's so many more Christmas songs than Thanksgiving songs.
Yes. Yeah, there are. But what about Come Ye Thankful People Come?
That's a good one. Johnny Cash also has a very good Thanksgiving song.
The Song of Harvest Home.
Yeah, we've played a few today, and we have a few other on our list you're going to hear throughout the rest of this hour and next hour as well. Thank you, Holly. Happy Thanksgiving. Peter in the Bronx, hello.
Hey, why did the turkey cross the road?
I give up.
Because it was the chicken's day off.
Oh, not bad, Peter. It's pretty good, actually.
What's a pumpkin's favorite sport?
What's a pumpkin's favorite sport?
Squash.
Okay, that's pretty good, too. I may use both of these.
Hey, I'll give you one to use today. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Dewey.
Dewey who?
Do we have to wait much longer for this dinner to be done?
Well, that's weak. Your first two were a little bit better, I think. But that's not, you know, I'm sorry we didn't have the rim shot ready for that, because those were all rim shot worthy jokes, as far as I'm concerned. Classic jokes for this Thanksgiving holiday. All right, 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Kind of open phones for the rest of the show. No more guests. It's your opportunity to be heard on whatever you'd like to comment on. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Thank you for listening. If you want to jump on board with anything we are talking about, you can do so at 800-848-9222. By the way, I have been made aware of an alarming trend, right? This trend, now look, let me preface this by saying I am aware that sometimes that I will kind of, I have a Shatnerian way of speaking where I will take a sentence that should be 20 seconds and stretch it out into a minute. I know there are big gaps in between what I'm saying, and I know sometimes there are, that I slow down in between what I'm saying, but I have been informed by several people, not one or two, but we're talking half a dozen, that the people that listen to the podcast version of this show, meaning not live, but the podcast, they actually go so far as to speed up the podcast. Some people listen to this show at 1.5 speed or 2x speed. Some person even said he listens at 2.5 speed. I can't tell you how much I am discouraging you from doing that. Now, I know some of you say, well, the only reason that you do that is because so that you can hear the full show. Guys, that is not how this show was designed to be listened to. It is designed to be listened to with my melodious tones, taking you through every step of the way in a certain cadence and in a certain manner. So, for my sake and your own, please do not speed up any portion of the show. I have to tell you. All right, 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're talking about. And, you know, one question I got via email that I didn't have a chance to get to was people were asking me about the Alaska situation, and basically Lisa Murkowski won in Alaska, and so did the congresswoman that had beaten Sarah Palin, Mitt Pultola, in the special election. She has now officially won due to ranked choice voting, and top five, final five, and then ranked choice voting. I want to stress that the type of voting system, while I am an advocate of ranked choice voting, the type of voting system that I am in favor of is not the Alaska system at all. Okay, not at all. And then, you know, I've said that a few times, and people have said, well, what's the difference between what Alaska is doing and what you're in favor of? Now, the kind of ranked choice voting that I'm in favor of is plain old simple ranked choice voting. You rank your choices. If anybody gets a majority of the vote, that person wins. Boom, done. And if nobody gets a majority, you move on to the person with the least number of votes, and that person's votes carries over to their second choice. What they have done in Alaska is just insane. So they have this system of final five voting, and I know some people here in New York that are even trying to bring this to New York, and I'm doing whatever I can to stop them, because not only because it's a bad system, but they're ruining the reputation of ranked choice voting. So let me just get to this question about how this is different from conventional ranked choice voting. Final five voting, which they have in Alaska, is the combination of two voting systems. You have a single ballot primary where all the candidates run, Democrat, Republican, independent, third party, and then that people vote in that regularly. They don't rank their choices or anything like that. And then the top five candidates advance to the general election regardless of party affiliation. And then for the second round, there's an instant runoff general election where you rank your choices and have it in a conventional way. So I find this so bizarre. And the woman that's pushing this is a very wealthy businesswoman by the name of Catherine Gell, who has no experience in political science. And it's basically the only reason this is taken seriously anywhere, the only reason it was put on the ballot anywhere, is because a woman who has money, in this case, Catherine Gell, wanted to put it on the ballot. Nonpartisan elections and ranked choice voting has a almost a century long history in this country. And there's almost no data to support that final five works. Now, it's no accident that there are 150 democracies or so in the world, and not one of them uses final four or final five or final anything, because it makes no sense. You think about it, essentially what you're telling the voters is, okay, let's take the one fundamental benefit of ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting, which is that you don't have to pay the costs of a second election. You don't have to have a whole second election, and let's do away with that. All right, so what's the point? Then let's also have people vote totally differently in the first round versus the second round. Okay, that's as confusing as can be to the voters. Why would we do that? Oh, and also, because it's a, like most contests, the people that are going to get the most attention are the major party candidates. Chances are, in almost every contest that uses this bizarre system, we don't really know because there's so little data, because it hasn't really been used much. And this is one of the areas where I part company from Andrew Yang on, even though I like Andrew Yang. It's so discriminatory towards minor party candidates. And ultimately, if you're somebody that is fond of voting for minor parties, Green, Libertarian, Constitution Party, whatever, chances are they're not even going to make it to that second round. So to me, it's costly, it's confusing, it's discriminatory towards minor parties, and it's not really clear to me what the benefit is. I would prefer kind of what New York City has for special elections, just plain old nonpartisan elections with ranked choice voting. That's what I'd like to see. So I hope that that explains, one, what the difference is, and two, why I am not for this Alaska-style system. And, you know, I was really disheartened yesterday. I've been in touch with Ron Lauder's people, the billionaire Ron Lauder, who funded the Term Limits Initiative in New York City. And I'm trying to get him to fund a petition drive to get nonpartisan elections on the ballot in New York. And, you know, I sent a follow-up email to his people yesterday, and they said, oh, yeah, we're in touch with so-and-so. We think it's a good idea. And they mentioned another friend of mine that I know who's an advocate of Final Five. I said, whoa. No, we are not on the same page. I am absolutely not encouraging you to spend money to get Final Five on the ballot. I'm encouraging you to get nonpartisan elections on the ballot. So the Final Five people in New York, they've co-opted my billionaire. The billionaire was all prepared to go along with my proposal. I spent a lot of time writing out a memos on this, doing research, producing data. And again, it's not as if I'm flush with free time at the moment, and I still did all this work. And yet here the final five people swoop in and try to co-opt this idea. So I'm hoping that that doesn't happen. We'll see where it goes. 800-848-9222. Gene is at the Jersey Shore. Hello, Gene.
Michael, how you been?
I'm doing great, Gene. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, just calling in. You keep me company. I'm keeping you company. Hey, just calling in. As much as we, you know, we love you out here in the chief seats, denouncing Bay is a little bit of a stretch. I got to tell you that.
How come? Tell me why.
Well, you know, Bay is just an extension of, you know, in my generation, being a little older than you, Babe. You know, we're cheering for a guy in the, you know, in a baseball game, Babe. Your buddy's a Babe. A girl is a Babe. Now this evolved into Bay.
Well,
maybe
is
they
that
want to make it sound like it's a good thing, like you were saying? But I don't think it's a denunciation. Good Lord!
I don't know. I find it pretty annoying. So Bay is a derivative of Babe.
Well, that's my opinion. I think that's naturally how it seemed like it would have evolved from.
I see. Okay. See, I thought it was an acronym. I thought it stood for something, but I will accept the correction, Gene. I thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. I have to tell you, though, I still find the word irritating and annoying. I can't help it. I just do. It just hits my ear poorly. So yesterday, what day is today? Today's Thursday. Tuesday, not yesterday, the previous day. My wife and I both went to get COVID booster shots, and we went to different places. We had different appointments. I went to the place that I went to for my previous three rounds of shots, and I couldn't find my vaccine card. Now, I was going in the afternoon, and my wife made an appointment to go somewhere nearer to our house later in the day. Couldn't find my vaccine card, and I was taking Carmine with me. I load him into the car, and I realize I don't have my vaccine card for them to stamp it or write out another thing. So I go into the house thinking it's going to be a 10-second trip, and my wife sees me go back in. She says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I can't find my vaccine card." She says, "Where is our child?" I said, "He's in the driveway. He's in the car in the driveway." And then she goes out into the car and waits with him while I look for my vaccine card. Lo and behold, it was not going to be a 10-second trip. It was going to be a 10-minute trip. Couldn't find it anywhere. And lo and behold, I really like the pharmacy that I went to, SuperHealth. They were able to reproduce the vaccine card for me, gave me the vaccine. I had no wait, which I love. My wife had to end up waiting. She went to another pharmacy, 35 or 40 minutes, and I'm feeling great. And I do like, with this vaccine, the little bit of soreness that it gives you at the injection point. You kind of feel like you worked out. Even though you didn't work out, I like that soreness. I do have to say, Rachel completely disagreed, and she was very fatigued today. So that was our two experiences with this. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice. Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Happy Thanksgiving. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I am Frank Moreno. Well, if Norman Rockwell had painted Freedom from Want in 2022, he might have depicted a family gathered around a restaurant table with menus in their hands. This Thanksgiving, Americans are flocking to restaurants. record high food prices and key shortages of turkey and cranberries, for instance, are prompting more Americans to make dinner reservations instead of home-cooked meals this year. And I'm curious if any of you fit this bill. I'm not talking about somebody that always goes out on Thanksgiving to a restaurant. I'm not talking about someone that always cooks and hosts. I am talking about someone who this year is going out to a restaurant, even though normally you're always going to someone's house or you're hosting yourself. And why? 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This trend, by the way, is very good news for restaurants, which are eager to recoup lost revenue from the pandemic. And it could reshape the traditional home for the holidays ideal as convenience and value trump tradition and family recipes. More people are ordering catering and takeout food for their holiday tables. There's an article in the New York Post yesterday that said because of inflation, one of the typical Thanksgiving foods this year, particularly among millennials and Gen Zers, is, you know what? Not turkey, but pizza. I have to be honest with you. Some of you may think this is sacrilege. Maybe it is. I find pizza much more enjoyable than turkey. Turkey is not my jam. Never has been. But the trend is good news for a lot of these restaurants that have been struggling. And according to Brendan Sweeney, the CEO of Pop Menu, he told Axios that they are seeing this, meaning the trend of people ordering out or going out for Thanksgiving. They're seeing this explode. Pop Menu is a tech company that handles online orders for restaurants. He's tracking mom and pops with as much as $65,000 in advance food orders. For the first time in decades, it's more economical to dine out on Thanksgiving than it is to shop for, cook, and clean after a traditional Thanksgiving meal. I mean, the value, not just on Thanksgiving, but on any day, the value of eating home, one of the main ones, is that it was always a little bit more economical. One of the things that I have enjoyed doing over the years is when you prepare your own dinner, or in my case, have a loved one prepare the dinner for you. Although I'm apparently tasked with making dinner tomorrow, and I'm hoping my wife will be content in large part with leftovers, but we'll see. But we are seeing this explode. For the first time in decades, it's now more economical to dine out on Thanksgiving than it is to dine in. So I was going to say, one of the things that I've always enjoyed doing is comparing how much you can cook a meal for at home versus what that meal would cost in a restaurant. And usually the number is just staggering. So much more inexpensive to dine home rather than at a restaurant. But this year, no. I have never gone to a restaurant on Thanksgiving. I think I might have stopped by a restaurant after my family dinner one time, but I've never made that my primary Thanksgiving stop. I can see the appeal. You know, it's so much work to cook, to clean, to make sure there's seating for everybody. And I feel bad for the people that have to work in restaurants on Thanksgiving because they don't get to be with their families. But hopefully they get some Thanksgiving celebration of some sort. But this Wells Fargo analysis found, and surveys back this up, many consumers are going to restaurants this year instead of eating at home. Curious if this applies to you. 800-848-9222. The cost of food away from home increased 5.8% this year over last year versus 9.8% for a standard grocery trip, meaning you go to the grocery store, you buy whatever the standard staples are for a Thanksgiving meal. That's costing you 9.8% more this year as opposed to last year. Factoring in your time and effort, you could spend about the same time on a dish in a restaurant as you would preparing it at home. And there's a lot of value in eating out at the moment. That's according to Brad Rubin, one of the report's authors, who says that Americans usually look at eating it out as a luxury around the holidays, but this year it's more of a value. According to Chef Amaris Jones of Red Rooster Overtown in Miami, he told NBC News, "We already have reservations flying in the door, and our phones are ringing off the hook. If you look between the lines, between bird flu and inflation and more restaurants touting their holiday dine-in and takeout options, Thanksgiving and Christmas could start to look more like traditional restaurant holidays, you know, like Mother's Day or Valentine's Day. Americans are buying less food at supermarkets." I'm not saying whether this is a good idea or a bad idea, I'm just recognizing the trend, and I'm wondering if this applies to any of you. I can certainly see the appeal of this. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. The other thing is I am working today. I'm working actually another hour or two later than I normally would. And then I'm going home to sleep for 90 minutes or 2 hours, and then we're driving out to my mother-in-law's, probably about a 2.5 hour drive. But one of the things that I do feel guilty about is that I'm not really volunteering anywhere this Thanksgiving. And I really give a lot of credit to the people that do spend their Thanksgiving volunteering. My father, stepmother, and siblings, they're all volunteering at a soup kitchen today, for instance. And I always try to give blood or donate blood platelets because there's an urgent need around this time of year. And I'm going to be trying to do that this weekend at some point. But I'm wondering if people are looking to either volunteer their time somewhere or if they're looking to donate money to help someone who is going through a tough time, what you'd recommend in terms of where they can spend their money or their time. Because I think a lot of people want to help, they want to volunteer, but they may not know where. So I'm curious if you have a suggestion as to where. 800-848-9222. David is in Baltimore. Happy Thanksgiving, David.
Thank you, sir. Same to you and your family.
Thank you.
Me and my wife are going to do Thanksgiving out because most of the people that did live up here in Baltimore are now either dead or gone or moved away. So it's just me and her, and I'm not going to put her through all that.
But
we priced a turkey, just a generic turkey, 25 and up.
And then what do you think of a meal in a restaurant's going to set you back?
I'd say maybe 30, 35. So it's worth it to me to not put her through all that.
Right. I totally feel the same way, David. Obviously, it sounds like in your case, it's a combination of social factors, time, effort, and cost. But when you factor all that out, it's less expensive and it's less aggravation to go to a restaurant. I get it.
Yes, sir. And then, you know, after Thanksgiving, you got all that cleaned up. It's crazy. We don't have that many people anymore, and most of her family and my family live further away, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I totally get that, David. Hey, well, have fun. What restaurant are you going to?
We're going to Scoozie's out in off of Merritt Boulevard.
Nice. I have never been there, but I will put it on my list. Thank you, David. 800-848-9222. A survey this month by PopMenu found that 45% of consumers plan to order all or part of their Thanksgiving meal from restaurants. Similar survey from Technomic, which is a restaurant industry consultancy, pegged the number at 29%. That is up from 24% last year. So while Thanksgiving and Christmas stand out, other holidays like 4th of July, Mother's Day, and Easter are potential catering occasions and are also on the radar screen for people that follow the catering business closely. So according to Ruben, who prepared this report for, Wells Fargo, what Ruben is saying that it's not necessarily cheaper to go and eat out, even on Thanksgiving. But this year, at least, it might actually make sense to go out to eat for the same or a little bit more than what you would normally pay to make the meal at home. Because as you heard from David there, it's not just the cost, but it's the not having to deal with the cleanup, the time, the aggravation. I absolutely empathize with that. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Jeffrey in Queens. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, saving on the aggravation of cleaning up. That's almost the case of, honey, shall we go to the restaurant tonight? Because, you know, that we don't have to cook and clean up. So we'll pay three times the price for the food, or four times. But we get the joy of, you know, being treated like kings and queens in a restaurant. And now, of course, you've got the low-end restaurant, Frank, the middle-end, and the high-end, and the high-end. I mean, all right, Frank, I'm really disagreeing with your theory. Let me crunch some numbers. I'm 65, cooking my whole life. The example you gave a minute ago about spending, the man says the turkey, Frank, that's one portion of turkey that he used to feed you, 35 versus 25, okay? So, of course, you get portions for the several days afterwards. Frank, it's so I'm so upset with you, a man who I consider so well-reasoned. If you could just take the time in the next few weeks, crunch some numbers. Maybe you've never cooked, Frank, but you can make 10 times the amount of food for the same money. So if a restaurant costs $500 for 10 people, right, you can spend that $500. Okay, I made the point, Frank. I'm really upset with you. You want to have a back and forth, or you're not going
to
give me that?
Well, no, I'll give it to you. I'm just reading the Wells Fargo analysis. Again, I'm not going to a restaurant, but I can certainly see the appeal. All I'm saying is the standard grocery trip for Thanksgiving meals is up 9.8% last year, and the standard cost of a meal in a restaurant is 5.8%. So.
I can't, Frank. You know the expression "lies and
damn lies and statistics."
Right. I mean, you realize what you're saying, Frank? If it's up 9%, and so the family can cook for everybody can eat for $100, but if you want to go to a restaurant, that will be $1,000.
But in the case of David, right, and his wife, if it's just the two of them, they may not need leftovers for 10 days
If you want, okay, Frank, we may not need the food, but you have the I can never win on that argument. You may not need the food. You have the food. You're getting more food for them, more bang for the buck, Frank. I am now. If you want to start adding the cost of alcohol, that's unbelievable. You know, Frank. You know, I mean, you got to mention that. That's like alcohol is 10 times. More in a restaurant than and I'm not a drinker, so I guess I'm exaggerating when I say 10 times. Let me say one last thing, how disgusted I am with the media. Whether it's left or right, when they talk about this inflation cost, they're as if they're giving empathy and compassion when their salaries are from $500,000 to $5 million, and it doesn't affect them at all, but they feign is the word, right, Frank?
Right.
Compassion.
Yeah, well, that's a fair point. You know, I've always said the big thing, if you turn on cable news, the liberal networks, the conservative networks, the one thing that all the people that are on there have in common is that they're all millionaires. They have no idea what it's like deal with regular people.
Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Frank.
Yes.
Another
great
example of that was the president, the cost of milk, or the president, or any of the really rich people, they don't have no idea what the price of milk is.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Jeff, and thank you for the call. Happy Thanksgiving. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea what the price of anything is. Yeah, I would be the absolute worst contestant on The Price is Right. You know, my wife was complaining to me about inflation yesterday because she went to the grocery store and she brought a package of Baby Bell cheeses. You know, those things, it's great cheeses and they're in red wax and you unfurl it and it's really, really quite delicious and a little bit of a treat. And so she's got this bag of Baby Bell cheeses. And she said to me, like, she was clearly making a point with her expression. And she said to me, how much, take a guess, how much I paid for these Baby Bells? And meaning the number I know she's going to give is something far more than what it's supposed to be. But I have no idea what anything costs. So I said, oh, I don't know, $20. She says, and she looks at me like she's deflated and disappointed. And she says, no, that's ridiculous. I said, oh, I don't know. I don't know how much things cost. I said, is it $5? She says, no, I'm not even having this discussion anymore. You're so out of touch that you have no idea what anything costs that you don't even get the points that I'm trying to make. And I said, you're right. I'm like George H.W. Bush with the supermarket scanner. And by the way, that was blown out of proportion as well. That was made to look like he was out of touch. And it turns out he wasn't actually that out of touch. But The point is, I have no idea what things cost. Eight, even when I do the shopping, you know, whatever they cost, that's what they cost. I have no idea. 800-848-9222. Chris is in Old Bridge, New Jersey. Hello, Chris.
Yes. Hi, Frank. How are you?
Great. Happy Thanksgiving.
And I wanted to, I'm a first time caller, long time admirer.
Oh, great. Well, but, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Yes. And, I wanted to just say that, you know, it was just me and my wife, our kids, and it's my second wife, and all our kids are spread out all over the place. So, we went to a restaurant 2 years ago in Red Bank for a Thanksgiving buffet. It was a set price, and I'm telling you, it was over the top, unbelievably good, you know, with turkey was delicious, prime rib, ham. They had shrimp and oysters and all you could eat, you know, and the dessert bar was fantastic. But the second year we went, last year, not so much. So this year, unfortunately, I'm working, but I don't think I was going to go back again. It was great not have to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was reasonable price. I think it was $45 a head. And it was, you know, but I think it's good for some people. I know it was packed. They have two seatings and they were both packed. So, you know.
Yeah. Chris, what kind of work do you do, by the way?
I'm a retired cop. I now work in armed security in North New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah. Well, great. As somebody that's also working in today, I recognize that, that it does have some benefits, but it can also be a little bit of an inconvenience. So best of luck today. And so you would in the future, irrespective of what these inflation prices lead to, irrespective of the supply chain shortages, you think that, eating at home or at somebody else's home, that's a better value pound for pound than going out.
It depends. It really does. I mean, like I said, the first time we went to this restaurant, we swore that this is the only place we'll eat Thanksgiving. And then, you know, the next year, not so much. But, you know, there's other restaurants out there that have this same offer. So I don't know. I don't know. But usually I work every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So I get kind of screwed on most Thanksgivings. I just happened to get off last year and the year before. So.
Hey, well, Chris, good luck. Hopefully you get some time with your second wife.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's your second consecutive wife, right? Not at the same time, not a simultaneous wife.
No.
Good. Good for you, Chris.
But,
great.
She made a turkey for me already this week, so.
Nice. Hey, okay, whatever works. I'm a big believer of whatever works. Thank you. It's a great Woody Allen film with Larry David, where that's the title, Whatever Works. And that's my philosophy when it comes to so much. Yeah, by the way, I am not anti-eating at home. I want to be very clear. I'm just reading the statistics from this Wells Fargo analysis and reading these reports from these industry leaders that say restaurants are poised to have a big year, and I'm just asking if people are doing that this year. That's it. I have never gone to a restaurant on Thanksgiving, but I would try it. I totally get the appeal. 800-848-9222. For the people that are proponents of leftovers, I like leftovers, but unfortunately, in our refrigerator, we have no room. We have no room in our refrigerator to store all these leftovers. 800-848-9222. Billy is in Queens. Hello, Billy.
Hi, Frank. I just want to thank you. You know, you just inspired me. I'm going to try and volunteer somewhere today.
Oh, great. And, where are you going to volunteer? Do you know?
I don't know. Thanks to you, it just popped in my head.
Great. All right. So you're in Queens. What part of Queens are you in?
I live in Long Island City, like right outside the Midtown Tunnel.
Well, I am sure someone is going to call in with a suggestion of somewhere that you can volunteer today. I was talking with some. I know my dad. They volunteer at a church soup kitchen. Other folks volunteer at Project Hospitality. Other folks I was talking to yesterday. My friend Nick, he volunteers, this is on Staten Island, but a place on Bay Street. So there's a lot of places that could use help today. So Billy's looking for a place in Queens. If you have a suggestion, give me a call, 800-848-9222. My friend Gaetano is in Port Jefferson. Now, Gaetano, I know you're a big cook. You got to give people a pro tip on making the perfect Thanksgiving meal today. Give them something that they can hear from you that they're not going to hear on the cooking channel.
What's up, Mr. Frank? So you're going to be shocked what I'm about to tell you.
Love it.
So you know, not your guest, you know, the listeners know, I was a long-line chef that due to an accident, I'm not in the field no more, but my passion is cooking. To be honest with you, and you were hitting on the topics, honestly, way, way more affordable to order out. I know it's one of your sponsors on the radio stations is Uncle Giuseppe's. To be honest with you, for years, instead of dirtying up the kitchen, I would do like apps and I would do desserts. But the main meal I would get from Uncle Giuseppe.
Really? You yeah. shocked me.
No, yeah. And you know me. You've had my food in the past. I'm going to be honest. Feeding 8 to 9, 10 people the way inflation is, right now they have a package under $300. Just to make a charcuterie board and desserts cost me way more than $300.
Wow.
The way inflation is today.
What about what the gentleman was saying earlier, that when you take into account leftovers and everything, it's a much better value to cook home, even with inflation?
No, honestly, with the way things are today, especially these last year, I'm going to be honest. I make dinner for my wife every night, and I do the costs, and I'm like, wait a minute. I would have spent the same money or less going out to eat tonight somewhere.
Interesting.
It's the truth. And, yeah, but...
Gaetano, did you have a suggestion in terms of where people should be volunteering today, where they could be volunteering
today?
Well,
listen, today is the day that everybody wants to volunteer. But throughout the year, you know, especially I'm heavily involved and I love it because I was in the pizza field in the past. It's an organization and you had him as a guest, Scott Weiner. He founded an organization called SliceOutHunger.org. They run a lot of pizza events throughout the year. It's actually nationwide it's sliceouthunger.org. I would advise everyone to look it up. It's an organization that we do pizza events. And with that money, gets donated to your local soup kitchens, pantries. I would definitely advise your listeners to look up sliceouthunger.org.
There you go. That's a great, great idea. Thank you, Gaetano. 800-848-9222. Patrick is in Huntington. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
And happy birthday. I'm sure Carmine will be dressed to the nines today. Am I right?
Thank you. Yeah, I think his mother has a pretty good outfit picked out for him.
There you go. Listen, I'm a big advocate of blood donors. There was a period in my life I stopped for about 20 years, and I'm presently over 9 gallons.
Really? 9 gallons? Yeah. That is impressive.
And I stopped for almost 15 to 20 years when I was younger.
What made you stop? Just you got caught up with other things in life?
No, you want to hear. And this is something that's really hits home to a lot of people. I went and took my blood pressure. I guess I was about 25. And I started when I was 16 for a friend's son, a friend's brother. And I had high blood pressure. So typical male adult, put your head in sand. I'm not going back here again. And, and ignored my health because I was young. And I got scared away because of the blood pressure reading.
Patrick, it's so funny that you say that. The same thing happened to me. I used to give whole blood every 54 days and then give platelets.
56, you got it.
Every 56 days and then give platelets every week or every 2 weeks. And then same thing happened. It was about 10 years ago, and I went and they said my blood pressure was too high. They couldn't take my blood, and so I stopped giving rather than try and do something about my blood pressure. But then I subsequently got into, you know, a little bit better shape, lost some weight, and was a little bit more careful with, you know, some dietary decisions I was making, started taking some supplements, and then ultimately got my blood pressure to a better place. But I was giving every week, and I stopped for about three or four years at least just because of the blood pressure. It's so funny. We're kindred spirits in that respect.
Yeah, and you know what? It's almost like a little mini health checkup for us men.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, women are so more proactive with their health. Men, unfortunately what happens to even your coworkers and, you know.
You're right. Patrick, I agree with you. People are looking for something to do this weekend or today if they don't want to, if they can't run around today because they're going to someone's house. I think giving blood is a great way to do that.
To tell you the truth, I think the government should give some kind of incentive just to get more donors, anything. You know what I mean? Whether it be $10 on your tax return, you know, instead of checking off a box for a dollar presidential, you know.
Yeah. Well, look, I think that's probably a discussion for a broader day. If you donate this week, by the way, thank you, Patrick. If you donate platelets this week, which I'm hoping to do, you're going to get a free Thanksgiving T-shirt, which is great. But you should really do it because you save other people's lives. If you're interested in doing it in New York, I'm sure there's different ways to do it elsewhere. But you can call. And actually, this might be national. You can call 800-933-2566. That's 800-933-2566. And you can make an appointment. And they'll connect you with either a blood drive or a blood donation center close to where you live. That's 800-933-2566. Let me say hello to Robert in Suffolk County. Hello, Robert.
Good morning, Frank. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. More people are spending Thanksgiving alone than ever. For example, I never heard of this before. Two women in their 50s who check out at the local supermarket have told me that they're spending Thanksgiving alone. And I am also one of those people.
Well, are you usually with someone else, Robert?
What's going on? My family, they've deceased before me. So I never had one of my own. Well, so I'm one of those people who are alone Thanksgiving, too.
Yeah, are you?
And I'm finding that more people are now alone. These are women in their 50s who have had kids. They have families, but no one is spending Thanksgiving with them.
So, Robert, would you prefer not to be alone today?
Yes.
Well, so I really do think that, and because all of the research that we've seen from Harvard Business School, from psychologists, it's that loneliness really has a deleterious effect, not only on people's mental health, but their physical health. And I really think that if you were to go somewhere and volunteer today, for instance, that's a great way to not be alone, but also maybe make a connection with some people that, you know, that also may not have the day to spend with somebody. So what about that? What about volunteering at a soup kitchen or a blood center today, for instance?
Yes, I've thought of that at the church, and my health really doesn't permit me to do that, unfortunately. But about the loneliness part, I have cats. I rescue cats.
Oh, well,
they're good company and good for my health.
Well, that's great. My wife does the same thing. Robert, I'm sorry you're alone today. Hopefully next year it's a different situation or for some of the upcoming holidays. But I'm glad that I'm getting to spend some time with you on the radio. Have a great Thanksgiving. I appreciate you listening to this show. 800-848-9222. Rick is in New Jersey. Hello, Rick.
Happy Thanksgiving, Frank, and happy birthday to Little Carmine.
Thank you. Thank you on both.
Hold on, I had a hat on. I know you said you give blood as a tradition on Thanksgiving.
Well,
but do you have any?
I don't usually do it on Thanksgiving, honestly. I'm going to try and go there this weekend just because Thanksgiving, I'm usually doing what I'm doing today and running around. So I'm not going to give it probably today. Probably tomorrow or Saturday is more likely.
Okay, what I was going to ask is, do you have any family traditions for Thanksgiving? We have a lot of family traditions for Christmas, like putting up a certain ornament every year. It isn't Christmas till that ornament's on the tree. Do you have anything for that, like that, for Thanksgiving?
Well, it's interesting, Rick. So these days, since I've been with my wife, we go. Obviously, the exception was last year when my son was born on Thanksgiving, but we go to my mother-in-law's house because that's the one holiday that she hosts, and all of my siblings-in-law and my wife is one of nine, so there's a big family. They all get together on Thanksgiving, so we make the trip out to Long Island, and that's been my tradition in more recent years. Thank you for the call, Rick. But previously, what I used to do is I would, keeping in mind what Robert was saying, all of my friends that had nowhere to go on Thanksgiving, I would usually invite them over to my mom's house for Thanksgiving. And we'd have, it was almost like Broadway Danny Rose. We would have a party consisting of people that had nowhere else to go. Maybe their family was out of town. Maybe they were from out of town. Maybe they just didn't have anywhere to go. And we'd have a party and have a great time. I really enjoyed it. We'd watch football, maybe watch a movie, whatever the case may be. And then my mother, she, my whole life and still, no exaggeration, will cater for five or six times the amount of people that are coming to any given affair. So I'm not exaggerating here. These are not exaggerations. Let's say there are eight people expected at Thanksgiving, or she also hosts Christmas. So let's say there are eight people expected at Christmas. She will get enough food for probably 50 or 60 people. No exaggeration. So every Thanksgiving, we would have no refrigerator space for all of her, all these leftovers. So what would we do? The next day, what I would do is I would throw a big, lavish party for Black Friday. And this Black Friday party, which consisted only of the leftovers from my mother's house and whatever, sometimes people would bring something, was widely attended by everybody in my neighborhood and even beyond my neighborhood. You'd see 50, 60, 70 people. It became an event that people really looked forward to. And I really do miss doing it. And a lot of that same element of random people showing up and not knowing what the food is and all sorts of interesting things happening and sort of an anti-holiday holiday. A lot of those same elements are still present in New Year's Eve. But since I've been with my wife and we go out to Long Island and spend the night out there, usually we haven't kept up with that tradition of doing the Black Friday party. I do miss that. But I asked my wife if she wanted to do something like that this year, but she felt we were biting off more than we could chew because we're having this party for Carmine's birthday on Saturday and we still need to prepare for New Year's Eve. One of my favorite traditions as a wrestling fan was always the Survivor Series and enjoying the Survivor Series. It used to be on Thanksgiving, then it was on Thanksgiving Eve. Now it's no longer. Now it's on Saturday. So I'm going to try and put that on Saturday when people are over for Carmine's party. But that's really it, as far as I could tell, Rick. All right, we're going to give you an opportunity to try and win $1,000. If you want to be the seventh caller to 800-848-9222, we're going to give you an opportunity to answer 10 trivia questions in 60 seconds as part of the $1,000 minute. If you can answer 10 trivia questions in 60 seconds, you will be $1,000 richer. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This song is Thank You by, I'm not sure if it's Dido or Dido, but she is a great artist, a terrific singer, and I can't think of a song that has a more appropriate message on Thanksgiving than this one. We're going to do the $1,000 minute in just a moment, and a little bit later we're going to give you an opportunity to be heard on any subject you want for 15 seconds. I am hoping that you're doing something fun today. And if you're not doing anything today, if you're well enough, I definitely would encourage you to try and volunteer somewhere today. Because if you have nothing else to do, I think one, as I said to Robert, I think it might have a good effect on your own health. And I think there's no telling what you might be doing for someone else. So it's a great opportunity to help yourself and help someone else. And again, it can be a lot of fun. Now, again, I say this as I feel guilty because I'm not really volunteering, but I kind of feel like pitching in a little bit extra at work today is my little way of at least helping other people who might be able to get to enjoy the day off because of me. All right. Without further ado, it is time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Murano.
Well, let me say hello to Ray in Mineola. Hello, Ray. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Frank.
Ray, are you familiar
and
with
yours.
The... Thank you. Likewise. Are you familiar with the rules of this game?
I am.
Okay, great. So if you're ready, we'll get started.
Sure.
All right. What is the main ingredient in pumpkin pie?
How about pumpkin?
Who appears at the end of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
Santa Claus.
What football team always plays on Thanksgiving?
I think it's... let me think about this. Lions? Detroit Lions?
Correct. What comedian and singer released the Thanksgiving song in 1992?
Adam Sandler.
Correct. What president first proclaimed Thanksgiving to be a national holiday?
I think that was... I'll go with Lincoln.
We'll take it. Who was the first American woman in space?
Sally Ride.
That was correct, but we are out of time, Ray. You did well. You got six correct, but you took a little your time answering a few of those questions.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you on hold. Talk to Avery, and don't hang up until you give Avery all your information, and we'll send you a consolation prize, okay?
Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving again to you.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks. It's good talking to you. I'm sorry you didn't win the money. Avery, if you wouldn't mind, please taking Ray's information, because I can see what's going to happen with you and Curtis tomorrow here, because the two of you are going to find every disgruntled listener I've ever had and make it out as if we're ripping people off or something. I've heard the two of you, how you guys operate. So please, you know, it's Thanksgiving. Don't screw Ray over on Thanksgiving for the sake of one of your Curtis comedic bits. We can't let that happen. By the way, let me thank not only Avery, but Broadway Bill Lee and Joe, who has been filling in for our regular crew. And it's funny, Joe is an interesting guy. I knew that Joe's name was Joe, but I didn't realize his last name was whatever it is. I don't know if he wants the last name used. So the whole day, I have been sending stuff to another guy that works here named Joe. No response on anything. And then when I started getting emails from this Joe, I realized, oh, okay, now it makes sense why he didn't respond to any of the emails that I had already sent him. But my thanks to everybody. I know it's not easy working on a holiday, especially for a show that you're not familiar with. And I know that we've had our fair share of stress today. So I appreciate everybody pitching in. Bill, what are you doing after work today? Are you going somewhere? No? So just this, you're going to sleep. I don't blame you. All right. Well, good. You're welcome. Nobody's at my house, so you're welcome to go there if you want to chill out a little bit. You could spend time with our three cats. All right. 800-848-9222. By the way, something that I think a lot of people are going to be talking about is a segment we did earlier in the week on human composting. So basically, if you didn't hear the segment, there's this huge trend where instead of being buried, instead of being cremated, more and more humans are having their remains turned into soil, into a compost. And lo and behold, my wife heard that segment, and she now wants to do that for herself. And she said she wants a tree planted in the backyard, and she said, if I predecease her, that... she wants me to handle her arrangements and then turn her into soil and plant a tree and always point out that tree. And that if I move or if the family ever moves on and we're not in that house anymore, we have to move that tree to our new residence. That's what she wanted. But apparently, so you never know the impact you have on people, including the people close to you, because my wife and I have talked about our end of life arrangements before. And I don't think she'd ever mentioned human composting before until hearing the segment on the radio. So I'm still thinking about what I want to do. And I want to thank somebody wrote to me. I had always said that my perfect scenario, after I donate all my organs, which my wife wants to do also. She's big into organ donation. After I donate all my organs, I would like to be cryogenically frozen. But I never really had the, you know, it's expensive to be frozen. So someone emailed me, I don't know if they want their name used, and said that it's more affordable than you think, because what a lot of people do is they take out a life insurance policy and pay a monthly premium, and that insurance policy goes specifically to the company that is going to freeze you. So I emailed the guy that was supposed to come on the show talking about cryonics the other day, and I said, is this accurate? And you know what he says? Yeah. He says, most of our guys are paying for this through an insurance policy. So all of a sudden, cryogenics is not that much of a pipe dream. I always thought it was going to be something I was going to have to be a multimillionaire to afford. All of a sudden, it's looking more affordable. So I'm going to make some decisions on this quickly, because as I saw with my friend John Maringolo passing away this week, you just never know when your number's up. But my wife wants to be compost. I think I want to be frozen. But maybe I want to be compost also. I don't know. We'll see about that. I'll tell you, speaking of compost, what drives me crazy. So we put out the trash every Monday and Thursday. Obviously, I don't think they're coming today because it's a Thursday. And by the way, if somebody's a sanitation worker and they can correct me on that, please feel free. We put out the recycling every Monday. Last weekend, the landscaper does his fall cleanup, gets all the leaves. And so there's bags and bags of leaves, as well as the usual grass clippings. And he puts them in the appropriate bags, color that you're supposed to do, and puts them out on at the front of the curb on Sunday to go out on Monday. Right. Or maybe he just put them in front of my garage and I brought them out on Sunday night when I brought the rest of the garbage and recycling out. So Sunday night into Monday, I bring the rest of the garbage out, the rest of the recycling. Monday comes around and sure enough, they take all the garbage. They take all the recycling. They don't take any of the leaves or the grass. It's all just sitting there, and it's been sitting there for 3 days. And my wife said to me 2 days ago, she said, look, it's clear that they're not going to take it. You have to bring it back in. We can't just leave it lying out there. And I said, well, look at our neighbor, Deborah. Look at our neighbor, Lenny. They've all left their leaves and grass out in the street. Can't we see if they come and leave it out there another day or two? So yesterday was one of those days where I was annoying my wife on so many different levels. And she said, please bring these leaves in. You said you would do it. And, you know, do it. And so I could tell she was pretty ticked off. So I brought it all in. But I feel like the sanitation folks owe me a little bit of an explanation here. Why did they not take those leaves last week? Right? Why did I have to bring them back to the garage? And now I'll have to bring them out there for Monday in the hopes that they take them again. I thought we should have solidarity as a neighborhood. We either all leave our leaves out there or we all bring them in. But my wife disagreed. All right. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame in a moment. If you want to be heard as part of your 15 seconds, you can give me a call, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. Before we wrap up our special Thanksgiving edition of the program, if you want to start queuing up to be heard for 15 seconds, you can do so at 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. I'm off tomorrow. Curtis Lewa will be here. My sympathies in advance. Let me offer you the disclaimer that anything Curtis says about me for the 4 hours that he's sitting in this chair tomorrow, whatever it is absolutely not true. The entirety of the 4 hours, any reference to me, I'm giving you the warning. I don't know what he's going to say. It is absolutely 100% not true. There's one story that I got a kick out of that I don't know what to make of, and I'm going to share it with you before we roll out of here. There is a flock of sheep that are walking around in a circle. Dozens of sheep have been eerily walking around in a circle for 12 days straight in northern China's Inner Mongolia region. This bizarre behavior, and you could look at it. In fact, I'm going to link to it if you haven't seen this at facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. This bizarre behavior captured on surveillance video shows this large flock continuously marching clockwise in a nearly perfect circle on a farm. Some other sheep can be seen watching from outside the rotation, while others at times stand motionless in the center. Video of this bizarre scene was tweeted last Wednesday by Chinese state-run media outlet People's Daily, which reported the sheep are perfectly healthy and the cause of the behavior remains a mystery. The owner of the sheep, who has been identified as Ms. Miao, claimed the spectacle began with a few sheep before the whole flock joined in. Although there are 34 sheep pens at the farm, only the sheep in one of the pens have been acting this way. Which pen do you think it is? Okay. Pen number 13. They've been on the move since November 4th, and it's not clear whether these sheep are stopping to eat or drink. Some have speculated that the sheep's behavior could be caused by a bacterial disease called listerosis, also known as circling disease. But we don't know. We don't know. It's weird. Weird to see. All right, without further ado, we're going to give you an opportunity to be heard for 15 seconds on this Thanksgiving edition of
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Roger in Manhattan. Roger. Frank in Glendale.
If you want to volunteer and do things for charity, the Knights of Columbus are always looking for you. If you are a Catholic gentleman, visit www.kfc.org or visit a local council.
Mike in Montclair.
Happy Thanksgiving, Frank. A splendid first birthday tomorrow for Carmine and your family. One last thing, a warning. Don't eat the brown acid. It's not good.
Neil on Staten Island.
After almost a year of Eric Adams, people are saying, bring back de Blasio. Happy Thanksgiving, Ellen.
Jose in the Bronx.
St. Anthony's Shelter for Renewal, 410 East 156th Street, Bronx, New York, needs volunteers and donations today and every day. St. Anthony's Shelter for Renewal, 410 East 156th Street, Bronx, New York.
E. Frank in Astoria.
Yes, Frank, my Knight of Columbus Council won its 8th Star Council Award, but I would just like to recompense this. You know, the prisoners at Rikers Island deserve a good Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas. Why don't I have a federal takeover now?
Eddie in Nassau County.
On the first Thanksgiving, the pilgrims ate popcorn. Hey, corn pop, let's go Brandon.
Pat in New Jersey.
Hi, Frank. I just want to wish you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving and happy birthday to little Carmine.
Thank you. Brandon in New Jersey.
Not to blow up anybody's spot, but it seemed pretty evident to me that the caller for the money game was googling the answers. I was just wondering if that's allowed.
Well, I mean, that's why you're limited to 60 seconds, right? Because, okay. you know, that's the kind of the reason. Chris is in Brooklyn. Thank you, Chris, on this special Thanksgiving edition of the program. All right, why don't we end it there? This has been a lot of fun. Hopefully you're doing something fun today. If you're not doing something fun, I hope you're doing something productive. If you're not doing something productive, I hope you're enjoying an opportunity for some solitude, some prayer, some quiet reflection, some meditation, whatever the case may be. I hope you're getting to enjoy the day off from work today. If you're somebody that is working today, we got some great programming on this radio station the entire day. So keep it tuned here. And I think you're going to be very pleased with what you hear. For everybody listening on WABC in New York, stick around one more hour. Actually, stick around the whole day, but especially the next hour, because I will be anchoring the WABC Early News. Last time I did that, was Thanksgiving, and my wife went into labor. Hopefully this time that doesn't happen. Frank Moreno, good day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.